And we are on air for Fan for Racing Radio tonight. And this is Monday, July the 25th. We've been on a two-week break, and I have to admit I'm the reason why. I was tested for COVID on July the 11th and tested positive. And I didn't test negative until last Friday. So we appreciate everyone being patient and understanding why we weren't here for the past 2 weeks. Really excited to be back on air here tonight. And joining me for tonight's show is our co-host, Sal Sagawa. Welcome to the show, Sal.
Oh, thank you, Sharon.
Okay. We're going to start off tonight with some short track news, and we're going to follow that up with our review of the ARCA Menards Series at Pocono Raceway in the first half hour. We'll include some ARCA East and West updates as well. In the next half hour, we're going to start with some post-race audio from Chandler Smith. He's the NASCAR Truck Series winner at Pocono Raceway and driver of the number 18 from Kyle Busch Motorsports. Afterward, we're going to review the Truck Series race at Pocono. And then at 9:30, we'll review the Xfinity and the Cup Series races at Pocono Raceway. 10 o'clock, of course, is our Hot Topic Sound-Off conversation with our Bamber Racing crew. That starts at 10 p.m. So with that, Sal, let's go to the short track news. Did you get a chance to watch the SRX races by any chance this season?
No, you know, I've missed all of them. And it's funny because I recorded all of them. And then I end up deleting them because then, you know, that week it ended.
Mm-hmm.
So there's no use in going. There's no use. Yeah, well, you know what I'm saying? Like, you know, for the previous weeks.
Mm-hmm.
And so I ended up deleting the.
Okay.
The thing,
well,
but I didn't see it. I know, because this week was a championship week, too, so I should have.
Right.
I should have watched it.
Well, the season finale was Saturday night out at Sharon Speedway with the championship on the line. Marco Andretti was able to battle back from an early race incident to secure that 2022 SRX Series Championship, but it was Chase Elliott who held off a late-charging Tony Stewart for the race win. Matt Kenseth finished third, followed by Ryan Hunter-Reay and Bobby Labonte to round out the top five finishers. Now, Elliott is 2-for-2 in SRX competition. He adds a win at Sharon Speedway to his 2021 win out at Nashville Fairgrounds. Ryan Newman finished second in the point standings. He was 2 points behind Marco Andretti, and Bobby Labonte took third, followed by Stewart in fourth. The top four in points were separated by only 7 points at the end of the season. So it was pretty tight. Only 6 races in the SRX, the Camping World SRX Series. And it was a lot of fun to watch.
Oh, I bet it was. Like I said, I missed all of them. I mean, I should have at least watched one of them, but I don't know. It was like watching the old IROC series, you know. And then it's especially after Tony Stewart played that, you know, try to play Pop Stewart, you know, to I can't remember which driver it was that one race. You know, they kind of race each other hard, and. You know, Tony wanted to play Papa Stewart, and that's when I thought, I'm not going to watch it.
Oh, okay. Well, it was kind of cool. Last year it was Tony Stewart that took the championship, so I kind of enjoyed the fact that it was somebody besides Tony Stewart that took the championship this year, and I also enjoyed that it was so close. I love seeing all of the NASCAR drivers that were involved, and at Sharon Speedway, the big news was Ryan Blaney racing with his dad, Dave Blaney, on dirt out at Sharon Speedway. And unfortunately, Ryan was out of the race pretty early, so we didn't get to see the matchup between father and son there. But I'll tell you what, Chase Elliott raced Dave Blaney pretty hard.
Oh, yeah, I'm sure he did. I mean, Chase doesn't. Chase goes out there any race he races. You know, whether it's an exhibition series or whatever you want to call it, he always goes out and gives it his all.
Okay. Well, and again, seeing Matt Kenseth and Ryan Newman out there racing along with, somebody like Bobby Labonte, I just really enjoy watching it. Okay. Any other short track racing news that you wanted to make sure we highlighted tonight?
Yeah, we had the summer showdown this past weekend over here at Evergreen Speedway.
And how did that go?
It was pretty good. They had the pro late on Friday. Then if the winner of the pro late would have won the super late on Saturday, there's like an extra $30,000 bonus. There's all kinds of bonus money they're putting up. It's funny because Derek finished second in both races and ended up with $28,000 because of bonus
money.
But yet the winner of the super late model race on Saturday only pocketed $25,000.
Oh, isn't that something?
Yeah. Well, they had a for the whoever was fast time, basically the pole winner for the summer showdown on Saturday. If they chose to go to the back of the pack and finish in the top three, then they're guaranteed I think it was like 10,000. So Derek had the pole, so he went to the back. And if he'd have won, he would have pocketed. They basically between the top three drivers, they pocketed $60,000, which isn't bad for a short track rate. Yeah, it was really good. It was. You know, and Derek finished second. He finished second behind Tyler Tanner on Friday night, and then Saturday night he finished second behind Preston Peltier.
Well, that sounds pretty good. I'm pretty excited to hear that race went pretty well for Derek. Now, the Slinger Nationals happened here just recently, but Slinger Speedway was still in action. Jeff Holtz tops the Pro Late model field at Slinger this past weekend, so that was cool to see.
Yeah, they do a lot of racing out there at Slinger, and I know, you start reading more and more about it. You know, there's a lot of good racing that comes out of Slinger.
Yes, there is. Also, Jake Johnson scored his first modified win in the modifieds at the SBM 125. He's the former Snowflake 100 champion and now just one of just five winners in history of SBM, so pretty cool to see that for Jake.
Yeah. I'm trying to see where you're... Are you on Racing America or are you on Flow?
I'm on Racing America.
Okay, that's why I'm on Flow.
Also, William Sawalich swept the Pensacola late model weekend. So it was a big weekend for him winning both of those races.
Oh, yeah, it is. I mean, there's a lot of good racing that's coming out of back east Florida and stuff like that. It's amazing.
It is amazing, and I'm really happy that Racing America and Flow Racing does such a great job of covering a lot of these races. So it's pretty good to see that. Also, Jared Breyer earned a Hampton Heat victory at Langley Speedway. I've got relatives out in that area. They like to head out to the racetrack, so hopefully they saw that race.
Yeah, you know, you get a lot of family out there, it seems like. But I mean, that's neat, if they're race fans, they get a chance to see it. And especially Langley. Langley is, gosh, there's so much history in Langley. It's not even fun.
There really is. There really is. Okay, I'm going to head over to Flow Racing now because some of this is going to be kind of some of it is repeated over at Flow Racing. But I wanted to mention that Jonathan Davenport became the first three-time Silver Dollar Nationals winner out of Greenwood, Nebraska, so the I-80 Speedway. And I believe that was the last race at I-80 Speedway. So that was a pretty big event for him to become a first three-time winner there.
Yeah, they had a really good style field out there, too. Tim McCready was out there. Earl Pearson Jr., Brandon Shepard, you know, you had a lot of big names out there, for that race.
Yes, it really was a big one. Their Mother Nature kind of interfered with Indiana Sprint Week round two out at Lawrenceburg, so that's going to resume tomorrow night. So you can watch for that racing to pick up tomorrow night.
Yeah, they have a lot of good drivers out there too. Matter of fact, Logan Seavey, who's raced in the Camping World Truck Series, is one of them that's going to be out there. So is Cole Bodine, and then Jake Swanson, who's from my part of town, is also going to be out there racing. So that's going to be a really neat race to see. But to see how Logan Seavey, how he can, match up with, getting back on what he's familiar with, which is dirt.
Yes. Okay. Another big win, somebody brought a broom to the track. Tyler Courtney took the sweep out of Lake of the Ozarks. So for the second time in as many nights, Tyler Courtney is the Tazos All-Star Circuit of Champions presented by Noble One. So big weekend for Tyler Courtney.
He brought a broom with him. He was ready to go. I've seen a couple guys bring a broom. I've seen a guy in Victory Lane ask for a broom, and they brought him one, and that was going back to probably four years ago. We were at Utah Motorsports Park, which is the old Miller Motorsports Park in Salt Lake City, And Noah Gregson was racing the K&N West Series at the time, and he swept. They had ran doubleheader races Saturday and Sunday, and Noah swept them both Saturday and Sunday. And Sunday, when he was up on Victory Lane, he was asking for a broom, and one of the crew members found a broom. I don't know where, but they brought up some funky old broom that looked like it was ready for the trash. And Noah was walking around the stage sweeping with it. It was pretty good.
Well, it's always fun when you can win two for two on a weekend. So congratulations to all the race winners from this weekend. There's too many for us to cover all of them, but I think we hit on some of the highlights. Taylor Gray, though, in the Arkham Menards series, came up with another win this weekend, even though it was kind of an up-and-down day for him.
Yeah, I was able to catch the replay. I thought I'd recorded it, and then I found out that I didn't. But then luckily MAV TV went and replayed it. So it was kind of neat to see to see Taylor go back into get that win.
Mhm. Yes, it was he kind of led for a good part of the race. He's 17 years old from Denver, North Carolina, and the race was actually called early because it was starting to get dark at the track, and of course they don't have lights out at Pocono. He led more than half of the event, but he lost a lap during the first of two scheduled breaks after a slow pit stop, and he wasn't able to beat that pace car off of pit road, so he had to race his way back up to the front. and back down to the lead lap. But there was a timely caution for a startled car for Parker Chase on lap 46 that gave Gray the chance to get back on that lead lap. And Gray's crew chief really was the star of the day. Chad Johnson wisely called his driver to pit road to top off with fuel during that caution period while the leader stayed out. So Gray acknowledged Johnson after the race for that pit call, because that's really what kind of gave him what he needed to win the race.
Yeah, you know, it's because of the length of that track that I think a lot of, you know, a lot of the teams, you know, they know they have fuel, then they think they have fuel, then they don't know if they have enough fuel, because we see it through all three series when they race over there. You know, when it comes down to the last 5-10 laps, everybody's always talking about, okay, do we have enough fuel to make it, you know, because how many times in the past have we seen drivers run out of fuel?
Yep.
You know, you're trying to get back to the check, come back to the checker flag.
Exactly. So that was a good call by Chad Johnson. There was also a multi-car crash that involved Amber Balkin, Andy Jakowiak, Sean Kaur, Ed Pompa. That happened between turns 2 and 3. That brought the caution out with 31 laps left. There was a red flag for all the cleanup, and all the leaders that opted not to pit during the previous caution made their pit stops for fuel at that time. But because Gray had already made his pit stop, it allowed him to stay out there. And again, it was ultimately the race was called after 64 laps, following a caution flag for a spin by Jesse Love. So that's what ended the race. Nick Sanchez was in the second of Gray in the final laps, but the caution for Love's spin ended his hopes of scoring his third ARCA Menards Series victory of the season. The regular season, Xfinity regular season driver Brandon Jones crossed the finish line third, followed by ARCA Menards Series championship leader Raja Karuth in fourth, and Daniel Dye finished in fifth. The next five drivers were Connor Mosack, Jake Finch, Chris Wright, Jason Kitzmiller, and Tody Breidinger completed the top 10 finishers. So it was a big night for those guys, and certainly a big night for Taylor Gray.
Oh, yeah, especially with, being able to be Brandon Jones, an Xfinity driver coming up, you know, who's always strong when he gets out there. You know, then a really good finish, you know, for Jake Finch, you know, with the Phoenix Construction Toyota. You know, his dad's the one that sponsors the team. And, you know, everybody knows who James Finch is. James Finch had a stint, you know, the Cup Series, you know, with a few drivers.
Phoenix Racing,
yeah. Now he's focusing on his son. And the son is racing a lot of stuff, you know, this year. But, you know, it's kind of neat because only 11 drivers finished on the lead lap and the rest of them, you know, didn't finish on the lead lap. So, you know, to, you know, get all those laps in. But, you know, like you said, you know, the lights, you know, play a big part, you know, and how they have to schedule these races because, you know, you have one or two red flags and you know you're not going to finish the race.
Yeah, that's true. And there was a long red flag for that multi-car crash. Now, the ARCA Menards Series season continues next Friday, July the 29th. They'll be running the Reese's 200 at Lucas Oil Indianapolis Raceway Park in Clermont, Indiana. And the race will be broadcast live on Fox Sports 1 starting at 6 p.m. Eastern. So let's talk about the series point standings as they head into Indiana this coming weekend.
Yeah, the series point standings is Raja Karuth is still leading the points by 3 points over his teammate Nick Sanchez. And in third is Daniel Dye, who's 9 points back from him at 471 points. And then we have the big jump, the big gap, which is Tony Breidinger, fourth, and she's 64 points behind Raja Karuth. And then fifth is Greg Van Alst. Sixth is Amber Balkin, who was involved in that big wreck. Seventh is Brad Smith. Eighth is Sammy Smith. Ninth is Taylor Gray, who has 3 wins on the season but only 6 starts. So you kind of wonder if he had those other 4 starts where he would be in the points.
Exactly.
And then rounding out the top 10 is Jesse Love with
right. Sammy Smith, Taylor Gray, Jesse Love. Those drivers all have only 6 of the 10 races under their belts. So, yeah, it would have been great to see, because Sammy Smith also has 2 wins in just those 6 races. Taylor Gray, 3 wins out of the 6 races. So, yeah, it would have been cool to if they could have run the full season this year. It would be a lot tighter up at the top, I think.
Oh, yeah, because when you look at Sammy Smith, he's his average finish this season is 3.7. And and the points leader, Roger Caruth, is 6.3. Other than that, you have Nick Sanchez and Daniel Dye at 7.4, 7.3. So that 3.7 would definitely and also Taylor Grace, 4.8 average finish.
Yes.
You know, that's a lot of points, you know, that they've missed out on, you know, by not, you know, by being 4 races short. So, you know,
yeah,
that just kind of gives you a little bit
of
an idea.
Age. It's because of their age. They're only racing the Sioux Chief Showdown races. But next year, I look for those guys to be racing full-time in the Arkham Menards series. And I bet we'll see them contending for some championships there.
Oh, yeah. You know, and even when you go down, you look at the best average finish by driver, and that goes to Brandon Jones, who's only raced 3 races, but his average finish is a 1.7.
Yeah, that's amazing, isn't it?
Which means he's had nothing less than a second-place finish. Well, he's got he has the 2 wins, and then his other finish was probably a second place.
Mm-hmm. Yep.
From having that 1.7,
right.
That's how he got it. Yeah. So
he's
got 2
even
wins
though it doesn't look like
place.
It's very competitive, it's been a very competitive competition. Do they have the Sioux Chief Showdown points up, Sal?
Yeah, let me go back to Sioux Chief points is Sammy Smith leading the points, Taylor Gray in second, Jesse Love in third, Roger Caruth in fourth, Daniel Dye rounds out the top 5. And then from there, then we go down to Nick Sanchez in 6th, Tony Breininger in 7th, Greg Van Alst in 8th, Amber Balkin in 9th, and Brad Smith wrapped up the top 10. And that's after five races.
Right. Mid-Ohio was the last Sioux Chief Showdown race. There's 5 more, so they're at the midway point of their season. And they'll pick up again with the Sioux Chief Showdown points at the Raceway, Indianapolis Raceway Park.
Exactly, yeah, at IRP, they'll be back. And you got a good battle between Sammy Smith and Taylor Gray. There's only 8 points separating them. There's only 9 points when you go down to Jesse Love to Sammy Smith. And then when you get down to down after that, you're talking about 17 points, Roger Caruth in 4th. So Sammy Smith, Taylor Gray, and Jesse Love all have a really good they got a really good points battle going on.
It's pretty tight. And actually just 2 points between, let me see if I can figure out who this is, Roger Caruth and Daniel Dye. So Nick Sanchez, those guys are really tight in there too. And that's from 3rd to 5th.
Yeah, you know what? I didn't see that.
That is a tight
points battle.
So we're midway through the Sioux Chief Showdown season. It picks up again next week at IRP, and it's going to be interesting because you know these guys are going to be back at the track and ready to kind of put some distance there for themselves if it's at all possible. We'll have to see what happens.
Oh, yes. It is possible. It's very possible. It's going to be a good finish all the way. It's going to get down to the wire and see who ends up victorious.
Exactly. Now that's the Reese's 200 again, July 29th at 6 p.m. Eastern at Lucas Oil Indianapolis Raceway Park. It will be televised on Fox Sports 1. So that's great news for all the race fans. Now the ARCA East and West, they're not going to be racing again until August. The ARCA West will be racing the Napa Auto Parts ARCA West 150 on August the 20th at 6:30 Pacific time. That's 9:30 Eastern time out at Evergreen Speedway. So, and it will be live streaming on Flow Racing.
Yes, I remember the last time I went to an ARCA West race over there at Evergreen. They ran the first race they ran out the gate was ARCA Menards. Well, back then it was the NASCAR K&N. But during the super late race, which was the last race of the season, they established an invitational race, really big race. And there was a really bad wreck, which one of that involved two of the super late models that caught fire, and it was a really bad wreck. But yeah, I know the drivers are looking forward to going back to Evergreen. It's a 5/8, very, very fast track.
Okay, and also the Specker 150 for the ARCA East will take place on August the 28th at 2 p.m. Central, that's 3 p.m. Eastern, out at the Milwaukee Mile. That race will be televised on MAPTV, Motorsports Network, so fans will still be able to watch that race as well. And with the I think that still falls into the time frame that MAPTV and Flow Racing are working together. I think MAPTV is kind of merging in with Flow Racing, and I think you'll be able to see it there as well. So a couple of races for the East and West coming up in August, but we still got one big race here coming up at Lucas Oil Indianapolis Raceway Park for the ARCA Menards Series and the Sioux Chief Showdown next week.
Yeah, so it's going to be a good weekend for racing next week.
It definitely is. Also, there's a great article up at ARCA Racing about Mamba Smith preparing for his ARCA Racing debut during the Reese's 200 out at Lucas Oil Indianapolis Raceway Park. He's been a part of sports management, I guess you'd say, as a PR rep for drivers in the ARCA Menards Series, but he's going to get behind the wheel out at IRP this coming weekend, so that's going to be fun to watch.
Yeah, it is. It's going to be, you know what, actually, I got a chance to meet Mamba the last 2 years at the Snowball Derby. He was up there and got a chance to talk to him for a little bit. He was actually racing. He was racing Pro Lakes. And he'll probably be back out there again this year. He'll probably be back out there again this year. So it's going to be exciting to see, you know, how,
it
you know,
is.
What he can do. And
it's a very interesting
really
transition and a unique journey, as they indicate in this article. I would really encourage everybody to read this one because he definitely has a passion for racing. And it's going to be cool to see him making that ARCA Menards Series debut this weekend.
Oh, and he's really a super nice guy too. I mean,
he is
a really
personable.
Super nice guy. I mean, I've got up and talked to him, you know, and he'll stand there, he'll chew it up with you and everything, and really, really great guy.
Yep, a very good personality. I've worked with him in securing some drivers for the show as well. And so that's why it's so much fun to see him now getting into racing himself. So, again, I really encourage everybody to get to know him. I'm going to reach out and see if we can get him for the show on Thursday. I'm not sure if he'll be available or not, but we'll certainly give it a try.
Yeah, he'll be a really good interview. He's really candid, really open. And I know the listeners will enjoy, you know, hearing from him, you know, talking to him, listening to him.
Yes, indeed. Okay. It's now at the 9 o'clock time frame, and I do have here in the Camping World Truck Series, it was Chandler Smith who won out at Pocono Raceway this past Saturday, and it actually was a season finale because it was time for us to crown the regular season champion as well, and that was Zane Smith. So even though Chandler Smith won the race, it was Zane Smith winning that regular season championship. But I do have some post-race audio here from Chandler Smith, who won that race. He drives the number 18 for Kyle Busch Motorsports and their Toyota. The entire interview is just 6 minutes 56 seconds, so about 7 minutes long. So I thought we'd listen to the entire interview, and then you and I can comment afterwards. So.
Okay, sounds good.
Okay, here we go.
Now we'll be joined by the winner of today's NASCAR Camping World Truck Series race here at Pocono Raceway. That's Chandler Smith. No question for Chandler, please raise your hand. We'll get you a mic. We'll start up here.
Kyle Magda, Rowdy Mag Light Race, immediately heightened times news. Can you talk about the battle there with Priest? I know he got on you on the outside there, and then you got back around him.
Yeah, I was dominating the race all day. It was in clean air. Never really got in dirty air all day, so I didn't really know what our truck was going to do when I got in dirty air. So when he did get by me, we took a huge shift. Like, our truck was not that great. But luckily, a restart came. All three KBM trucks lined up. We were all in the inside lane. Corey gave me a really good push. The four gave him a really good push. And ultimately, that's what led to us getting the victory.
Any more questions for Chandler? Up here to Chris and then to Colt.
ChrisMagGetchman.com. Watch Chandler. Just look your outlook on the playoffs. How do you feel? Is there a place that you're maybe potentially worried about going to? And how do you approach, you know, not having been able to be consistent as far as the schedule goes over the next couple months?
Yeah, no, I'm honestly really happy with how the playoff schedule is. There's a lot of short tracks, and then there's Homestead and Kansas. In Kansas, we were pretty solid at. Had some issues, drove from the back like twice or whatever there. But we had a really strong truck there. I've never been to Homestead, never seen the place. I'm also going to be racing the Xfinity car there as well, so it's going to be a long day for myself. It's going to be double duty. So with that being said, we're going into the playoffs with a lot of momentum, obviously, and I think that's on our side for sure.
Cool. Cole Cusimano, Arizona Republic. Congratulations, first off. Chandler, is this the most confident you felt going into a playoff run after today?
Yeah. I mean, yeah, considering last year was my first time ever really going for the playoffs, and we weren't great all last season till the playoffs. We barely made it in by a thread. And then when the playoffs started, we were really good. It was just kind of hit or miss if we had problems or if we didn't have good, it didn't go our way on pit road. But we always had really fast trucks. So I guess because we've been really consistent all year, whether it been we had issues consistently, which isn't good, but we figured them out. And we've been having really fast hundreds week in, week out. So with that being said, I guess yes to answer your question.
And then what did you learn from last year that you can apply to this year in the playoffs?
How much the regular season matters as far as, like, today, that one stage win we got, the win we got, the 5 extra playoff points, the one with the stage win, and even now finish second in points, I think it's 10 extra points or whatever that carries through, that's really big. So I guess a little bit of that, just kind of being mindful of that and making sure in the regular season we are on the days that we're not good, we needed to make sure we try to get some stage points, which we tried, which we didn't really. The 99 was really good at that this year, to say the least, and it's going to show when we get to IRP.
Go over here. New finish, Chandler. 4 Truck Series wins now. You've done a couple of Xfinity Series races. I'm curious how you feel your stock as you kind of start to look towards 2023.
Yeah, I feel like I should have more than 4 wins, to be honest with you, too. It makes me happy hearing I got 4, though. So with that being said, yeah, I mean, it feels good. I feel like I've had a few wins stolen from me this year. Felt like I had a few stolen from me last year, so finally to start getting some wins, being consistent all season, I think that's a step in the right direction for this whole camp.
Davey?
Davey Siegel with SiriusXM. Kyle was just in here, and he was mentioning how he sees a little bit of himself in you on and off track when he was a younger driver. Gearing up for the playoffs now, what are you going to do in terms of leaning on him for information? He has a lot of it to give. How do you kind
of
take out of him what you need?
I mean, he's a resource, right? He's my boss. He's the driver. He's a competitor when he's racing these, but he's also a resource that I need to utilize. It's just like the sim a little bit. He's got so much experience, so many laps, and so much knowledge when it comes to just racing knowledge in different situations, right? So whenever I feel like there may be a situation where I haven't experienced that quite yet, I reach out to him and, you know, ask him and lean on him. But if I've experienced it, I lean on what experience I have, because at the end of the day, it's just like if you have two different driving styles, right? When I first got into truck racing, I struggled a lot when we went to mile and a half. Couldn't figure out the air, couldn't figure out aero games, all that stuff, and I leaned a lot on Kyle. But at the end of the day, driving style matters, how you drive, and all of that affects those different situations. So I finally was just like, whatever, I want to go figure it out. I tore up a lot of trucks doing that, but now look, we're winning races. Got my first mile and a half win at Las Vegas this year, so obviously I figured something out.
Bob, do you have a question? Bob Hockers, Fox Sports. You've had some success at IRP, so I'm curious, do you feel good going in there next week?
Yeah, for sure. Yeah, I mean, 1,000%. I've been there 3 times, I believe, and I've won twice. So with that being said, I was really excited to see IRP get added to the truck schedule in general. It sucks because that's going to be the first playoff race. My wife, we're about to have a child. She wasn't here today. She wasn't here at Mid-Ohio. So it really sucks not having her around, but I've got a lot of exciting times coming. And but with that being said, yes, I'm really excited to go to IRP. Do I have a standby driver? No, because it looks like that. Well, I'm sure we have a plan, but it looks like I'm going to still be at. If I miss a race, it would be Richmond.
Any final questions for Chandler? All right. Well, congratulations. Oh, sorry. Up here, Scott.
Scott Walsh from the Scranton Times. Chandler, you talked about how on that last restart you got the push to get out in front. There were a couple of times where Ryan was kind of challenging you there over those closing laps. Just how were you able to kind of hold him off a little bit?
Aero games, breaking the draft. For some reason today, and I had this issue a little bit last year here, last year was a lot worse than it was this year, but we had a little sputtering and we lose fuel pressure down the front straightaway. So on the last lap, actually, when he was able to close really close, getting into one, it sputtered pretty bad down the front stretch, and that was able for him to get a pretty big run on me. I just had to block really hard, but at the same time, we've had different situations here recently where we've had really good trucks and it just hasn't worked out our way. Today we had a really good truck. It literally went textbook our way, and I believe that's just God's timing pure. So.
Any last ones for Chandler?
Okay, I believe that's it. Your thoughts about the interview with Chandler Smith. He seems to be carrying a lot of confidence going into the playoffs.
Oh, yeah, he is. I mean, you have to, you know, anytime, you know, you win a race, you know, especially, you know, in that series, you know, and, you know, to prep, you know, and not only that, but, you know, to, you know, you got a whole team behind you that's counting on you. And then you got a team owner, you know, who doesn't like to lose, you know. So, I mean, there's a lot riding on his shoulders, you know, week in, week out when he gets behind that wheel. You know, the wins have, you know, sure helped, you know, help his confidence level. So I guess we'll see what happens when the playoffs start, you know, how he fares.
Yeah, and it sounds like he's excited about the tracks that are on the schedule. So I don't think that's good news for the competition. but Chandler Smith, I'm really impressed with his confidence. This is his second season. He mentioned that he was in the playoffs last year. That was his first experience. So one thing that's really on his side going into the playoffs this year is that experience that he can kind of rely on coming into this season's playoffs.
Yeah, because everybody knows how tough the playoffs are, how tough they get, you know, as you start advancing, you know, to the next one, you know, the intensity level rises. You know, the mistakes the drivers make that are in the series, that are in the playoffs, you know, they start making those little mistakes. And that's all it takes is, you know, for you to be caught up in one of those mistakes. And you know what, and your playoff hopes are all but gone.
Exactly. So he indicates he's got a pretty good understanding of that and how much he needs to prepare. Congratulations to him and his wife on the birth, their forthcoming birth of their first child. So that was kind of cool to hear as well. I wonder, Richmond,
yeah, well,
said it's the race that he might have to have somebody on standby.
Yeah. And, once again, we'll see what happens. When it gets closer to race day, what he does, if he gets out. Or if, he does go, he tries to win one, for the newborn that's coming in.
Mm-hmm. Yep, it's pretty cool. So let's go ahead and get into, let's see if I can pull up my stats here. I want to get into the review of that Truck Series race out at Pocono Raceway. Let's see here. I'm kind of pulling up some stats here as, whoops, that's not the one I wanted to hit. Okay, let's go ahead and start with that. It was the 13th annual CRC Brackling 150. The winner was Chandler Smith, age 20, driving the number 18 Charge Me Toyota. He drives for Kyle Busch Motorsports. His crew chief is Danny Stockman, Jr. It was his fourth victory in 54 Truck Series starts, and his second victory in 11th top 10 finish this year. It's also his first victory and first top 10 finish in two races at Pocono Raceway, the Tricky Triangle. Ryan Preece finished second, and that was an exciting finish between those two. He posted his second top 10 finish in two races at Pocono, and it's his sixth top 10 finish this season. John Hunter Nemechek, last year's winner at Pocono, finished third. He posted his fourth top 10 finish in five races at the track. And Corey Heim, who finished fourth, was the highest finishing rookie of the race. Now, Zane Smith won the Camping World Truck Series regular season championship. He is the sixth different winner to accomplish that feat. Also, Grant Infinger and Matt Crafton clinched those final two open spots in the 2022 NASCAR Cup Series playoffs. So it was a big race. I'm going to continue here in just a minute so we know who the other finishers were. Chandler Smith earned his second Truck Series victory of the season, taking the trophy at Pocono Raceway, the win was his second of the season at Pocono and the fourth of his career were the remainder of the top 10. Let's see. Ryan Preece was second, followed by John Hunter Nemechek. Corey Heim finished in fourth place, followed by Carson Hocevar. Then it was Austin Hill, Ty Majeski, Christian Eckes, Derek Krause had a great finish, and Tanner Gray. The pole sitter, Zane Smith, won the regular season championship and is the top seed into the first round of the playoffs. He had issues with his throttle getting stuck, and after repairs, he ended up finishing 13th. Despite finishing within the top 10 after losing his power steering, Derek Krause actually missed the playoffs based on points to Matt Crafton. That was a disappointment for Derek Krause. He came so close. Stage 1 was won by Chandler Smith. Stage 2 was won by Christian Eckes. There were 5 lead changes among the 3 drivers and 5 cautions for 20 yellow flag laps. The average speed of the race was 111.593 miles per hour. Your thoughts about the top 10 finishers there?
Yeah, it was like you said, it was a really good race between Chandler Smith and Ryan Preece.
Ryan Preece.
Ryan Preece. It was good to see Matt Crafton get back in to make it back into the playoffs. I think they said something about that every season that he's raced.
He's
since
made
the playoffs,
it. Yep.
He's made it in, yeah. So it was a close one for him. Very close.
It was very close.
Yeah, it was. Corey Heim, like you said, highest finishing rookie, you know, fourth. Man, those you start looking at the drivers that Kyle Busch has racing for him. He, you know, he really knows how to pick some good drivers.
He definitely does. A few drivers did have only one driver had a mechanical issue, other than the what we already talked about with the throttle for Zane Smith, and that was able to be fixed. Haley Deegan was out of the race on lap 57 because of a brake issue. And then two drivers were caught up in an incident early in the race, accidents early in the race. I was so disappointed for Todd Bodine. His 800th start, he was very emotional at the start of the race, talking about what a blessing it's been to be able to have 800 starts in the Camping World Truck Series. But he had an accident on lap 12, and that took him out of the race. That was sad to see. And then also Jack Wood, an accident on lap 18, took him out of the race for his 35th place finish.
Yeah, you know, I felt bad for the Onion, too. He was, you know, all he wanted to do was finish the race, you know, and it's sad, you know, that the person that he got in the wreck with had to go and, you know, drop a few F-bombs on him, you know, and make it seem like he's the worst driver on the track when actually
she
has no experience. Yeah, and she has no experience. She has no right disrespecting a champion like that. Lost even more respect for her because of that. She should have let it go, but, you know, either way, hats off to Camping World CEO. Gosh, I can't remember. I had his name right now.
Marcus Lemona.
Or, you know, Marcus, for putting him in the, you know, for getting him this opportunity to get that 800 start. He's the one that sponsored him, you know, that put
mm-hmm.
him in the truck, you know, so he can get, you know, to that magic number 800. You know, that for him to only run 12 laps, you know, was hard. But all in all, you know what? He got it. He has a storied history, you know, in the Camping World Truck Series. And a lot of people, a lot of fans, you know, were happy to see him.
Yes, they were.
You know, able to compete.
Yes, they were. The margin of victory between Chandler Smith and Ryan Preece was 0.262 seconds. So it was a really close finish. You have the points standings here for the Truck Series?
I have the playoff.
Okay.
I was looking at the playoff ones, but then I was looking
Do the playoff one, Sal. What the points are going into the playoffs.
Okay. The points going into the playoffs are, let's see. Gosh, you know what? I was just reading it, and it was really interesting because Wow.
It's over at NASCAR.com if you want to see that.
It's right here. Jayski had it.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, Jayski had it too. Here it is down here. Okay. So this is how they're lining up for the playoffs. Zane Smith, of course, our champion, 2,037 points. So he's going to be 37 points because they all reset to 2,000.
Mm-hmm.
Number two is Chandler Smith with 2,022, 15 behind Zane Smith. And then third is Ben Rhodes with 2,017. Fourth is John Hunter Nemechek with 2,016. Fifth is Stuart Friesen with 2,013. Sixth is Christian Eckes with 2,007. Seventh is Ty Majeski, 2,006. Eighth is Carson Hocevar in 2005. Ninth is Grant Enfinger in 2002. And our tenth and last driver is Matt Crafton with 2001 points, 36 points behind Zane Smith. There's going to be a heck of a battle for basically for Majeski, Hocevar, Enfinger, and Crafton being, you know, 30 points out of first.
Yep. But, you know, it's early. They've got, eight races in their playoffs. So it's going to be interesting to see how this plays out. Let me look at the schedule here, and we'll go over those eight races. Give me a little truck series schedule. Okay, then the playoff races here for the Camping World Truck Series starts at Lucas Oil Indianapolis Raceway Park this weekend. In August, on the 13th, they go to Richmond Raceway. That's the one that Chandler Smith was saying could be an issue for him with his wife expecting a baby. so keep your eye on that. In September, on the 9th, they'll race at Kansas Speedway. And that is a cutoff race for the truck series. Then September the 15th, they'll race at Bristol Motor Speedway to start off the round of eight. Then they go to October 1st out to Talladega Super Speedway, October 22nd at Homestead Miami Speedway. So that's six races right there. So actually it's seven races that they have. Homestead Miami will be the cutoff race for the truck series in October on the 22nd. And then the season finale takes place November the 4th out at Phoenix Raceway. So that is seven races that will complete the playoff rounds for these drivers. So it's going to be a lot of fun to watch.
Yeah, and actually, here's another thing that the drivers are going to have to watch out for, too, is the playoff points they have. Zane Smith is coming into the playoffs with 22 playoff points. Chandler Smith is coming in with 12. John Hunter Nemechek, well, let's go in order. Chandler Smith with 12. Ben Rhodes, who's finished 7th, is coming in with 13. Chandler Smith is coming in with 12. John Hunter Nemechek at 8. Stuart Friesen with 6. Carson Hocevar has 2 playoff points. Christian Eckes and Ty Majeski each have 1. Grant Enfinger,
yeah.
Matt Crafton, both have 0.
Wow. Yeah, those playoff points make a big difference for these drivers when they go into the playoffs. So it is going to be interesting to see how that continues to play out. Reset driver's points. Okay. Okay, yeah. Zane Smith has a whopping 37 playoff points coming into the playoffs. That's huge. He got those 15. That's like 3 additional wins that he gets to add to his playoff points to start off that playoff season for them. Chandler Smith with 22. 5 drivers have double digits. Stuart Friesen, John Hunter Nemechek, Ben Rhodes, Chandler Smith, and Zane Smith, all ranging from 13 for Stuart Friesen up to 37 for Zane Smith. That's huge.
Yeah, it is huge, especially with Grant Enfinger and Matt Crafton not having any.
Yeah. they had their chance, though. It just didn't work out for them. We'll have to see how the playoffs play out, you know, in these next 7 races or the next 6 races leading into the finale at Phoenix Raceway where the Final Four will compete for that championship. So interesting stuff there.
Yes, they definitely have their work cut out for them. actually, Matt Crafton has 1 and Grant Enfinger have 2. So, but even then, you're looking at Zane Smith with 37 and Chandler Smith with 22. Ben Rhodes with 17 and John Hunter Nemechek with 16.
Yeah, that one point that Matt Crafton has is actually from a stage win. So.
Yeah.
Is it from a, wait a second. Where did he get
no,
that
No, it wasn't
one?
From a stage win.
Yeah, it wasn't for a stage win. I don't know where he got that
no,
one point from.
I think NASCAR just slipped it in there. Kind of as a past champion provisional point.
Yeah, same thing with Grant Infinger. They're showing 2 points for him. So, yeah, I guess because they're the last two drivers, they end up getting that those additional points. But it's only 1 and 2 points for those drivers.
Yeah, so, I mean, but still that 1 or 2 points could make a difference.
Yep, it can. We'll have to see how it happens. Who's your pick for the championship at the end of the season? Who do you think?
You
well, let's start with the final four. Who are going
to
be the final four?
I think the final four is going to be, gosh, what a long shot. Matt hasn't really done anything. I really wanted to go with Matt Crafton as one of them, but you got to almost go with Dane Smith, Ben Rhodes. I would say John Hunter Nemechek, and I'd say Christian Eckes.
Oh, wow. Yeah, Christian has had some strong runs. I'm going to say it's the top four drivers.
Yeah.
I'm going to say Zane Smith, Chandler Smith, Ben Rhodes, and John Hunter Nemechek. But we'll see. Some of these drivers, somebody like a Carson Hocevar, Christian Eckes, or Ty Majeski, I think any one of those drivers could really come on strong during the playoffs. So we'll have to see.
All they need is a win.
All they need is a win.
A win and they're in. It don't matter what
the
playoff points.
Round.
Yeah,
yep.
Playoff points don't mean nothing. You get a win. And that's kind of what I was
yep.
thinking about. Maybe Matt Crafton does get a win to put him in.
Maybe he will. But, you know, Grant Infinger could get a win during these next few races. So we'll have to see what happens.
We see Daniel Hemric do it last year.
Yeah. Well, yeah. That was amazing. His first win, he ends up winning the championship at the same time. So that was pretty amazing.
Yeah.
Okay. Let's go ahead and move on now to the Xfinity Series, because that was a good race as well. Hold on here. I'm trying to now go to the Xfinity Series for the post-race. Okay. This was a pretty exciting race, too, between a finish between Noah Gregson and Ty Gibbs. I think that's one for the ages. In the 7th annual Explore the Pocono Mountains 225 on Saturday, Noah Gregson at the age of 24, driving the number 9 Bass Pro Shops True Timber BRCC Chevrolet for Junior Motorsports with Luke Lambert as his crew chief. He got his 8th victory in 121 Xfinity Series races, his 3rd victory and 13th top 10 finish in 2022. It was also his first victory and 3rd top 10 finish in 4 races at Pocono Raceway. Ty Gibbs finished 2nd, posting his 2nd top 10 finish in 2 races at Pocono, and he's the 11th top 10 finish this season. Josh Berry finished in 3rd, his 2nd top 10 finish in 2 races at Pocono. Sheldon Creed was 5th. He was the highest finishing rookie of the race, and this was an exciting race. Two of the most determined, talented young drivers in NASCAR put on a show for the ages in closing laps of Sunday's race. 24-year-old Noah Gregson held off Ty Gibbs, 19, by the blink of an eye to take the victory. When taking the lead with 22 laps left, Noah Gregson went on to hold off Ty Gibbs to win in the Xfinity Series race at Pocono. Gregson's first triumph at Pocono while earning his 3rd checkered flag of the season. Gibbs finished 2nd despite trading Pate with Gregson on the final lap. Josh Berry again finished third. Then it was A.J. Allmendinger and Sheldon Creed rounding out the top five. Sam Mayer placed sixth, followed by Justin Allgaier, Austin Hill, Daniel Hemric, Cole Custer to round out the top 10. Allgaier picked up his sixth stage win of the season, winning the first stage. Noah Gregson earned his series-high seventh stage win in stage two, and then, of course, he won the race. There were nine lead changes among eight drivers, five cautions for 18 yellow flag laps. The average speed of the race was 123.438 miles per hour. The margin of victory, 0.281 seconds. Your thoughts about the top 10 finishers here?
Yeah, it was a good race. I mean, to see Ty Gibbs and Noah, you know, battle it out, you know, without, you know, wrecking each other. I thought for sure when Noah came up to Ty, he was going to, you know, put him in the wall. Then when Ty came up, I thought Ty was going to put him in the wall because those are their M.O.s. They've been known to do that.
But they raced each other clean, and it made for an exciting finish, I thought.
Oh, yeah. Yes, they did. But I think the exciting part was seeing your cousin, Jeb Burton, and that,
oh my gosh.
Was pretty, that wreck was pretty amazing, too.
Yeah, we are not related, just to kind of make the record clear here. But
No, I know.
I get teased by that quite a bit. I will say, Jeb Burton took a, you know, thank goodness Pocono Raceway extended that barrier because so many drivers spun off of that turn three, and he just had nowhere to go. He hit, that car came down. Who was it that came down on him there? And it ended up launching him up in the air, and he landed on his hit, on his the top of his car.
Yeah, it was a rough hit. Tell you that it was.
It was.
But he got out and, you know, went to the infield care center and came out, did an interview, and probably went back and watched the rest of the race. But
yeah,
that's not the way you want to end the race.
Well, kudos to the track people there. They did a good job of getting the car turned over and keeping him calm. And he was able to kind of communicate, too, to let people know that he was okay. So kudos to everybody for keeping their cool in that situation and giving the workers a chance to get his car turned over and to get him out of the car. But you could tell he was ready to get out of that car immediately.
Oh yeah! As soon as they flipped it over, he was already hooking himself and getting ready to get out real quick.
Yep, definitely so. Okay, let's see. There were several accidents throughout this race. Lap one, it was, and that was disappointing as well. Alex LeBay and Rajat Kaurus got together, and they both ended up ending the race early. Lap 45, there were three people involved in an accident, Ricky Stenhouse Jr., Santino Ferrucci, and Ronnie Bassett Jr., all out on lap 45. Lap 46, it was Jeb Burton. He was the driver that was on top of his hood. Jeremy Clements out on lap 48 due to an accident. And the final accident victim was Sammy Smith on lap 53. Taking him out of the race. So that was unfortunate for all of those drivers not being able to finish the race. But we did see some really amazing racing, I think, from those top two drivers. And I was so happy to see them have that clean finish. And I think it really showcased their talent as well, the fact that they were able to finish that race very cleanly with each other.
Oh yeah, I'm sure it did. It had to. You know what? And you know, even just on another note, you know, you had to take your hat off to Sage Karam, you know, for coming back to Pocono. You know, after the, you know, after what happened in IndyCar, you know, and him and
Justin Wilson.
Yeah, when him and Justin Wilson got in the wreck and. You know, he talked about it. They interviewed him before the race. You know, he talked about it and said, you know, it was hard to come back. you know, he said he had to do it to make sure that he can still get into that, you know, first corner at full speed, you know.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, the only way he could do it, of course, was in an Xfinity car because he's not racing, no longer racing IndyCar anymore. And, you know, he's so, I mean, you know, it's kind of neat to see him, you know, get over that fear. You know, a lot of people think that these drivers are fearless, you know, and they wreck and they can do this and do that. You know, and they get back in the car, you know, and after a big wreck, you know, but, you know, when you lose your, one of your friends, you know what, and you're part of the, you're part of what happened, you know, we never know how it affects
That's
them.
That's huge.
But it's huge. I mean, yeah, he talked about it.
Yeah, it was really good to see him take that step and be able to get through all of that. And I'm sure it was not an easy step for him to take, but I think it was also a necessary step for him to take in order for him to move on from that. And, you know, Kyle Petty, Dale Jr., they all talked about each of them having to make their peace with their situations as well. And it's something very personal, and you know, and I think necessary. So it was good to see him get so much support from so many people as well.
Oh yeah, it was.
Okay. Anything else you want to talk about here? Well, we'll go to the points here for the Xfinity
okay.
series.
So the points were at AJ Allmendinger is still leading the points. Right behind him is Justin Allgaier. Third is Ty Gibbs. Fourth is Josh Berry. And fifth is Noah Gragson. And rounding off the top six is the rookie Austin Hill, who has two race wins. Noah has three. Josh Berry has two. Ty Gibbs has four. Justin Allgaier with three, and AJ Allmendinger with two. And then from there, then we go down to Brandon Jones in seventh. Sam Mayer, who had his issues early on in the race too,
mm-hmm.
is still in eighth. Riley Herbst, who looked like he was going to have a really good finish, and you know, was looked strong, you know, until he didn't do that last pit stop and started on the front, but he knew that he was going to get mowed down.
Mm-hmm.
10th is Daniel Hamrick, 11th is Ryan Sieg, and 12th is Landon Castle. And right there behind Landon Castle, Landon's on the bubble, and right behind him is Sheldon Creed.
Yep.
In the 13th spot, so Sheldon's still trying to find a win or trying to find enough points. So
unfortunately, Brandon Brown put out on Twitter today that he's not going to be able to race at IRP. I think they're going to be putting Austin Dillon in that car at IRP this weekend. But it's because of sponsorship. He said it's something that they worked hard at but was unable to secure that sponsorship. So he's going to sit out that race, but he said he would be back for the next race. So look for Austin Dillon to be in that number 68 out at IRP.
Yeah, they also pulled Ryan Vargas out of his car for IRP too.
Was also planned.
Yeah, well, he said it had to do with business, you know. So
mm-hmm.
I'm curious who's gonna get in that number six.
Last
year they haven't announced. Ryan just made the announcement today he was going to be racing. But I know last year they held Ryan out of all the road courses because he didn't have no experience. So they held him out of it and had put someone else in. So there'll be somebody in the number six JE Motorsports car this year also.
That's true. You've got Sheldon Creed, who really has been coming on during the second half of the season. I know we were a little disappointed. We thought he would do better in the first half, but he's still got a chance. If he can get a win in these next several races, that could put him into the playoffs for this series. It's going to be interesting to see if he can make that happen.
Yeah, it is definitely going to be interesting. He's got his work cut out for him too. You know, and a win, you know, would like you said, you know, would put him in the playoffs, and I'm sure that's what he wants. Dustin Morris to be in the playoffs.
They've got let's see here. That's 4, 5, 6, 7 races before their playoffs begin, starting at IRP this weekend. Then it's in August, they'll be racing at Michigan, Watkins Glen, and Daytona. And then in September, the final three races of the season for this Xfinity Series will be at Darlington, Kansas, and Bristol Motor Speedway on September the 16th. So there's still 7 chances for drivers to get that victory to punch their ticket into the playoffs here for the Xfinity Series. Any calls on who you think might be able to pick up a win between now and then?
You know, it's kind of hard. You know, I kind of had my eyes set on Riley, but that SHR team just doesn't – they just don't have –
they're behind.
They're way behind. You know, other than that, you know, I don't see anybody else that could – maybe Daniel Hamrick can pick up a win, but he's already in anyways.
Mm-hmm.
You know, it's – you know, it's hard to say. Ty Gibbs probably wouldn't all the next races after this. I'm sure he's going to be hungry the next race after what happened this past weekend.
Oh, yeah. You know, that's true. It's going to be interesting to see what happens. There are 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7 race winners out of the 12 qualifiers right now. So that means that there's 5 drivers that haven't gotten a win yet. Any of those 5 drivers you think can pick up a win between now and then? I know you mentioned Riley and Daniel.
You know, that's really, I mean, at the end of the season, I would have said Sheldon, but Sheldon just hasn't picked up the car yet. He hasn't just
mm-hmm.
yet. He doesn't know. You know, he's still learning. Obviously, it's a big learning curve for him because of, you know, his finishes.
Mm-hmm.
But, you know.
He's shown improvement, but you're right. It has been a big learning
curve. Yeah. Yeah, there hasn't been enough improvement to say, you know, hey, you know what, I got my money on Sheldon Creed.
Okay. Thoughts about the top 4 here?
Top 4? Probably going to be, let me see.
The final 4, I should say.
The final 4 probably be Ty Gibbs. You got to leave Noah in there, even though he's 5th in points. He's 5th in points because of the points that he lost with that penalty. But A.J. Allmendinger and probably Justin Allgaier.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I would agree with your assessment there. We're on the same page there. Okay. Let's go ahead and move on now to the Cup Series. I've got to pull up new stats here. So let me take care of that. Give me just a second. Okay. Now, this race, it's going to be interesting. Okay, they do have Chase Elliott here. We thought we knew who the race winners were, and then it all changed. But it ends up being for the 49th annual M&M's Fan Appreciation 400. Chase Elliott is your winner at the age of 26, driving the number 9 Napa Auto Parts Chevrolet for Hendrick Motorsports, with crew chief Alan Gustafson. It was his 17th victory in 242 NASCAR Cup Series races, his 4th victory and 15th top 10 finish this year, and his 1st victory and 8th top 10 finish in 14 races at Pocono Raceway. Wow, hard to believe he's had 14 races already. Tyler Reddick finished second, posting his second top 10 finish in six races at Pocono and his eighth top 10 finish this season. Daniel Suarez finished third, posting his fourth top 10 finish in 12 races at Pocono. Harrison Burton finished 23rd. He was the highest finishing rookie of the race. And for Chevrolet, it was their 34th NASCAR Cup Series victory at Pocono Raceway this weekend. So moving on here, Elliott won the race after Hamlin and Busch failed their post-race inspections. Chase Elliott was declared the winner after first and second place finishers from Joe Gibbs Racing, Denny Hamlin and Kyle Busch, were disqualified during their post-race technical inspection. It is a series best fourth race victory for the driver of the number nine from Hendrick Motorsports. He now leads the championship standings by 105 points over Ross Chastain and 111 over Ryan Blaney. Chase Elliott won the race after Hamlin and Busch were disqualified. It was Elliott's fourth race of the season, the first at Pocono and 17th of his career. Then Reddick finished second, followed by Suarez, Christopher Bell, Kyle Larson, Michael McDowell, also having a great run here recently, Martin Truex Jr., Bubba Wallace, Eric Jones, and Austin Dillon rounding out the top 10. Hamlin started on the pole and overcame an early spin to battle back to the front of the field, and with 16 laps remaining, he was running second behind Chastain. When the two got together and Chastain was forced up into the wall, Chastain could not continue. He ended up finishing 34th. Hamlin and Kyle Busch went on to cross the finish line first and second before their disqualification. Stage one was won by Kyle Larson. Stage two by Ross Chastain after Busch's disqualification. There were 15 lead changes among 10 drivers and 9 cautions for 37 yellow flag laps. The margin of victory, well, it's hard to say what the margin of victory was, really, because I guess they're going between Chase Elliott and Tyler Reddick. The margin of victory was 0.927 seconds. Your thoughts about the top 10 here and the disqualification for Denny Hamlin and Kyle Busch?
You know, I know, you know, I read about it and seen it, and you know what it is, I mean, I'm curious how far they're going to take it. If NASCAR is going to make it a level three and possibly, which we know they won't, but they really should be kicked out of the playoffs
it really, whether it was intentional or not, NASCAR's made it very, very clear that that there's no messing around with all of these parts, and that they are going to be very strict this year. They are trying to change the culture, and it's unbelievable how some people still subscribe to the "if you're not cheating, you're not trying" philosophy. But when you're talking about a sport, you know, like NASCAR, you can't have that happening in this sport or any other sport for that matter. It's not a good example. I felt so bad for Hamlin's daughter. She was so emotional about that victory. And then to find out that it was taken away, I felt bad for her because this is a child. How do you explain that to your child? and you know, so many people talked about how it cheated Chase Elliott from a chance to celebrate in victory lane as well. So it's just not tolerated anymore in NASCAR. NASCAR has made that very clear, and it still shocks me that there are people who think that that should be acceptable in this sport, and it's just not acceptable in this sport to be doing things that you've been told is not acceptable. And Joe Gibbs Racing has already said that they're not going to appeal the penalty. They're going to accept the disqualification and move on from here. But you know somebody had to test it, and they found out what happens. They crossed the line.
You know, and for them testing it, you know what, and going to that extent, you know, you have to set this. You have to set the bar. You have to set the standard. You know, just because it's Joe Gibbs, you just can't let them. You know, you just can't let it go.
No.
You know, it's not right. It's not right to the rest of the series. And it's not right to NASCAR. Why even put the rule in place if you're not going to force it? You know,
exactly.
Everybody said, well, it's not Hamlin's fault. You know, he's not the one that did that, sets up the car. It's not Kyle Busch's fault. He's not the one that sets up the car. But, you know, it's a team sport.
That's
right. You know
right.
what? And you know what? And it's always been like that. You know, so should they be penalized for it? Yes, they should, because it's their team. You know, whether they felt the car handled different or whether it did or not, that's not the point. The point is, you know, that, you know, you win as a team, you lose as a team. You know, that's up to
that's
Joe
right.
Gibbs, you know, and his car chiefs, you know, to make sure, you know, that the when these cars are built, you know, they don't – I mean, it was plain, it was obvious. They put a piece – you know, they added plastic or whatever it was, tape, you know, behind the ramp. They knew what they were doing. Now, if it was something
they knew what
that
they were doing.
I mean, especially if they try to hide it with the ramp, thinking, oh, well, NASCAR will take the wrap off. You know what?
Mm-hmm.
You gotta give them that $250,000, $400,000 fine. You know what? And you gotta kick them out of the playoffs and say, you know what, guys, I'm sorry, but you know what? You know, your team, this ain't the first time you've been caught cheating. You know what? And you know what? And the rules blatantly said, you know, if you mess with any part of the car, you know, what we've already put out there, you know, you got to pay the penalty for it. And you know what? And NASCAR's going to bet. They're going to turn a blind eye to it. And they might not take it any further. They might just let it go. They might give them a $100,000 fine. You know, let them continue to race, but, you know, there comes a time when, you know, if you're going to make the rules, you know, you got to enforce them, you know, and you got to force them to the, no matter who
well,
it is,
gonna,
you know, and
they're going to take a little bit of a hit in the points, but honestly, I really think they need to come down strong on this, because the way these guys look at it is risk versus reward. And they ended up, the finish for Denny Hamlin was 35th. The finish for Kyle Busch was 36th. So they didn't make very many points in this particular race. But you don't know if they've done it before and if it's why they have race wins. They may have gotten by with it before and just didn't get caught. But now that NASCAR's caught that, you can be sure they're going to be on the lookout for it. And you're right, it's not fair to the rest of the field. It's not fair to somebody like Chase Elliott, who should have been the one to celebrate in victory lane with the trophy, and he didn't get that opportunity. He was actually at home. He was on the flight and got home before he found out that he had actually won the race. So it's not a good look for the sport. It's an embarrassment that a team would put their driver in that kind of a position, from my point of view. And I think NASCAR needs to – they haven't said whether or not they're going to – it depends on what they find when they take the cars for further evaluation at the Research and Development Center for NASCAR. But, yeah, I agree with you. I think they need to come down hard on this. And they want to end that culture. So why people continue to perpetuate that is wrong to me. If you've got an idea, take it to NASCAR. If they approve it, then you can do it. If they don't approve it, then don't do it. And I'm just that firm about it. It's not
well,
fair to everybody.
First of all, they're not going to – they knew what they were doing, so they're automatically it's not going to go to NASCAR. You know,
well,
it's one of those things, you know – Yeah.
They're trying
you know,
to
it's one of those things, you know, where they thought that, you know, yeah, you know, then it came, you know, then came the trophy, you know, well, you know, I want the trophy. Well, did Hamlin says he earned the trophy? You know, he won the race. Okay.
I don't think so.
So, you know, and you know, and Chase keep, you know, going to keep it. You know, I don't want it. You know what? If it means that much, you know, going to, you want to put a, you know, a trophy with an asterisk on your mantle, you know, go ahead. But, you
how
know, at
you
the end
that?
Of the day, you know, you didn't win it because you didn't win the race.
Exactly. Exactly. I don't see how you can. That says a lot about the person if they feel that that trophy is theirs. It is not their trophy. Their team did something that was not legal, and whether it was by intent or by accident, they did something that was illegal and they didn't have a process in place to catch that if it was not intentional. So, no, he did not win that race because it did give them an aerodynamic advantage. And that's why NASCAR gave them the DQs. So, but let's go ahead and move on here. I'm sure we're going to talk about this extensively in our hot topic tonight as well. Let's see. There were a few incidents here on lap 35. Josh Palicki had an accident, taking him out of the race. Lap 135 and 142. Let's see. There were two more accidents. Ryan Blaney ended up out of the race. That's who it was. Ryan Blaney is. Was it Ryan Blaney that ran into? No, that's
yeah,
a different
no,
race.
Right.
Never mind. Yeah, different race.
Yeah, that was
race.
Xfinity. Yeah,
okay.
That was Xfinity.
Okay, and Ross Chastain on lap 42 had that incident with Denny Hamlin, taking him out of the race. And it's ironic that he ends up finishing ahead of Denny Hamlin in the running order here. After
it was. You know, there's all kinds of stuff on social media, you know, that, hey,
I know,
Danny, I
saw
finished, you know, don't matter. Yeah, I finished ahead of you, you know, and then the other one, you know, where they showed Danny shrugging. What happened, Danny shrugging his shoulders? I don't know.
Well, and I saw the one with Ross Chastain
with
eating
the DQ?
A DQ.
Yeah, cup out of a DQ cup.
Yeah. So I thought that was kind of funny, too. But, it's just an interesting scenario. And, you know, karma bites. I hate to say it. But anyway, we'll see what happens here as we continue on. But let's go ahead and cover the points real quick.
Okay, so
just,
now we're looking at,
out of time.
Yeah. Okay, the points we're looking at, Chase Elliott, who's already been announced as the regular season champion, wasn't he? No, not yet.
No, they still have more races.
Yeah. Yeah. Okay, so either way, Chase Elliott is the first, Ross Chastain in second, Ryan Blaney in third, Kyle Larson in fourth, Martin Truex in fifth, Christopher Bell in sixth, Joey Logano seventh, and Kyle Busch round out the top eight. Kyle Busch dropped a lot, not really, you know, I guess we'll see what happens with if any more penalties come around. And then from there, we go ninth is William Byron, 10th is Kevin Harvick, 11th is Alex Bowman. 12th is Daniel Suarez. 13th is Eric Almirola. 14th is Tyler Reddick. 15th is Austin Cedric. And 16th is Chase Briscoe. And Chase is on the bubble, and he's only 2 points. There's only 2 points separating him and Kurt Busch. But But then you also got to remember you have you got Kurt Busch, who has a win, so Kurt's already in. Denny Hamlin, who's 21st in points, has two wins, so Hamlin is in. And that's going to push, basically it's going to push Reddick. No, because Reddick has a win. Cindric has a win. It's going to put Eric Almirola. Gosh, there's a lot of scenarios over here.
Yeah. Chase Denny Hamlin right now is 21st in the points. So that pushes, you got Kurt Busch with a win, Chase Briscoe with, Chase Briscoe is 16th. So it pushes Eric Almirola and Kevin Harvick out below the cut line.
Yeah.
Okay. So, we're at the top of the hour and actually 1 minute past already. But it's been great talking with you, Sal. It's good to be back on the air. And we'll look forward to doing this again next Monday night.
All right. Well, everybody have a good weekend. And we'll talk to you guys all next week.
Okay. Take care, Sal.
Okay. All right. Good night.
Good night. Okay, with that, we are ready for our NASCAR Hot Topic Sound Off, and our Fan for Racing crew is all here. Let's start with Jay Huseman. Welcome back to the show, Jay.
Thank you, Sharon. I heard you say it. It's good to be back on the air, and it is. But the first topic, before you even introduce anybody, I know I speak for the entire team. We're glad you're okay and doing good. So that's the most important thing.
Well, thank you very much. I had 10 days of up and down, not knowing, feeling good 1 minute and not so good the next. So I'm glad it's over and I'm ready to move on. Also, a big welcome to Andy Lasky. Or no, not Andy Lasky, Mike Orzel.
Hello again. Yeah, great to hear you're feeling better, Sharon. Good to be back on the air.
Okay, thank you. And also to Tommy Kraft. Welcome to the show, Tommy.
Hey, thanks for having me. Glad to be back. Glad to hear that you're okay and that you're back.
Well, thank you very much. Never thought that would happen. I take such big precautions all the time, but I guess this new variant is pretty contagious. And out of a group that I deal with, there were eight of us that were out with COVID all at the same time. So I'm sure that's where it all happened. So anyway, let's get on with our NASCAR Hot Topic Sound Off for tonight. And let's see. Jay, let's start with you for the first hot topic here.
Well, I think you got to start where the race ended, and that is in post-race inspection. The top two cars, Denny Hamlin and Kyle Busch, DQ'd.
Okay. This is going to be an interesting because I know there's going to be some disagreements here. But, Mike, let's hear your thoughts.
Well, this is huge. This was NASCAR back in 2019. NASCAR kind of changed their enforcement model for penalties for post-race inspection. It used to be that they called it an encumbered win, where you would still be considered the race winner, you would still get the trophy, but you wouldn't get points and the win wouldn't count towards playoff eligibility. That's what their encumbered win was. And a lot of people said that wasn't sufficient, not enough of a penalty. So in 2019, NASCAR said, if you fail post-race inspection, we will disqualify you. That has not happened to a winner in the NASCAR Cup Series until this past weekend. There have been disqualifications from other positions. For example, Jimmy Johnson was disqualified from the second-place finishing position in the 2020 Coke 600. There's also been several disqualifications, winners and other positions in the Xfinity and Truck Series, but this is the first time we've had a winner disqualify the NASCAR Cup Series. In fact, it's the first time that a winner has been disqualified in the NASCAR Cup Series since 1960, and the first time that the first two drivers or competitors had been disqualified since 1955. So really big deal, kind of unprecedented in the NASCAR Cup Series. What happened was, in post-race inspection, they were peeling some of the wrap off of the two Joe Gibbs Racing cars, the number 11 and number 18 of Denny Hamlin and Kyle Busch, and they found basically additional layers of vinyl underneath the wrap, the decorative wrap that's on the outside of the car, and in NASCAR's determination, that provided a potential aerodynamic advantage for those cars. Both the cars had the same issue, and both the cars were disqualified, so now Chase Elliott is officially the winner of the Pocono race. They did say that, they don't anticipate additional penalties as a result of this. However, both cars did get taken back to the R&D center in Charlotte for additional teardown, so there may be additional penalties coming forward. We're going to have to pay attention to this. But, yeah, definitely big, big news here with playoff implications as well, because Chase Elliott gets those five playoff points, and he gets all the race win points, the stage points, everything that Denny Hamlin and Kyle Busch had previously gotten. Well, those all go to Chase Elliott, so the rich get richer.
Mm-hmm. Okay. Any other thoughts? Or are you saving it for the next round?
Oh, well, I think it's the right call. I mean, I've said before, and I know I said it in our chat, that I do enjoy the cat-and-mouse game between the teams and the guy with the clipboard, but sometimes the guy with the clipboard wins, and this is the consequence, and I've got absolutely no problem with it. That's not just because I'm a Chase Elliott fan and I'm happy the guy won, but, you know, you play games, you win prizes sometimes, and right now it looks like the Joe Gibbs Racing team, they won the prize that you get when you get caught cheating.
Mm-hmm. Okay, Tommy, your thoughts.
Thanks for Denny Hamlin and Kyle Busch and Joe Gibbs having the top two cars disqualified. I mean, of course, it's the right call. I mean, you obviously can't do what they did, so they got what was coming for them. Lucky day to be Chase Elliott. Seeing on Twitter how he's reacted, he's already said that, you know, he wants Denny to keep the trophy and all that good stuff. So, you know, handling it the right way. Denny posted a photo or a video of him drinking the champagne and with beside the trophy. So I guess Chase isn't gonna get that champagne that he won. But either way, I mean, like I said, it just stinks for Joe Gibbs. I know he's not happy, and I saw the where they didn't even appeal, and Toyota released a statement, and Toyota, you know, they didn't seem really happy, but instead of they backed Joe Gibbs and NASCAR's decision. So, I'm sure we'll learn more about what happened there over the next couple days, over the week before the next race. But just not good for Denny Hamlin and Kyle Busch, and lucky day for Chase Elliott.
Yeah. My issue, I agree with you guys. I think it was absolutely the right thing for NASCAR to do. I've said it before and I'll say it again. I don't want to crown a champion that has cheated throughout the season. And that's part of what we don't know, is whether or not they've done it before and just didn't get caught. So I really think NASCAR needs to do their due diligence, and I'm sure that they will. To make sure that that's not something that continues to happen with race winners especially. I do think that they are trying to change the culture. If you're not cheating, you're not trying. That has prevailed with NASCAR over the years. And that's what this is all about, is changing that culture and that way of thinking. I felt so bad for Denny Hamlin's daughter standing in victory lane, getting so emotional over what she thought was the victory for Denny Hamlin, only to find out later that it had to be taken away. And as far as Denny Hamlin keeping that trophy, I don't really understand the thinking with that. I know he feels like he won that race, but he did not do it legally, and I don't think he should have that trophy. That's my personal take on it. I think it's nice of Chase Elliott. I know Chase said that he doesn't really want to get a win in this manner, and I can appreciate where he's coming from, but the team cheated him of the opportunity to celebrate as he should have celebrated in Victory Lane by doing what they did with that car. So, and I've seen a lot of people on Twitter saying things like, it's a bad look for the sport. And it is a bad look for the sport when you have teams getting caught with that type of thing happening. Why have that tape underneath the wrap? And it's in essence doing what they used to do with the cars, where they would put tape over the grill in order to protect the engine from overheating. And that's what these guys did. They basically put the tape over the grill and gave themselves that aerodynamic advantage. So, again, it's illegal. NASCAR did what they had to do, and it's unfortunate that they were put in that position to have to do that, because it is a very bad look for the sport. Jay?
Well, I got to give props to Mike there with the statistics he had to start us off here. I hadn't realized that it hadn't been a winner that had been disqualified under this new rules. And that's the one thing that I think NASCAR in all the years has never lived up to. He talked about that encumbered win. Nobody really knew what that meant. It didn't really affect you because you got the win anyway, and it was just all confusing. If you're illegal, you're out. I mean, that's simple. That's black and white, you know. Now, when you talk, I know Sharon and Mike, the two you mentioned about disagreeing, the changing the culture, and I don't know why NASCAR is essentially the only sport that the whole if you're not cheating, you're not trying concept comes into play. I mean, no other sport promotes that. I understand where racing started and how it started and what they're trying to do, but I've said this before. There are series out there. It's called Outlaw Series. It's run what you run. If that's what you want to do, go run them. Okay, NASCAR is trying to. Now, I do feel that there are some areas where they could lighten up the rules and allow some more ingenuity, but they have not yet. I mean, they got them in a box. They're in the, you know, stay in the box. I think they could open that box up a little bit, bring back, like Mike said, the ingenuity and let these crew chiefs and engineers really play with some things. But until they do, don't do it. And this is the cost of it. And I think this was a huge statement as far as that. Like you said, it's the top two cars. I mean, third place wins the race. I mean, that's, you know, you see it occasionally at local dirt tracks, but not at the top level like that. So, I mean, I think that's a huge statement in and of itself. And I'll save my other part to the second go-round.
Okay. So do you think they need to do more, Mike, or is this enough?
Well, that's going to be the big question. And it's really – Joe Gibbs Racing really came up with an ingenious solution here. And if you haven't been to the NASCAR Hall of Fame in downtown Charlotte, you really owe it to yourself to go there. They've got an entire section there devoted to cheating in the sport. And they've got examples of confiscated parts that they've taken throughout the years. And they have an example sitting right next to it of what a legal part would look like. And you can look at the two of them, you can compare them, and can see the differences that these teams have come up with, these ingenious ways that they've come up with around the rules. And that spirit of ingenuity was 100% present in Joe Gibbs Racing's solution. And it may even be enough to dodge an additional penalty, because NASCAR said, thou shalt not tamper with Gen 7 spec parts that have to come from the manufacturer. Well, they didn't. And they found a way to manipulate the body of the race car without tampering with the Gen 7 spec part. What they did is they basically put a couple additional layers of vinyl to thicken up part of it. It wasn't over the grill, so it wasn't like putting tape on the grill. It thickened up part of the front fascia down kind of in the splitter area to give it a little bit more aerodynamic grab. And the really ingenious part is when you peel that wrap up, they were counting on that getting peeled up with the wrap and having just a regular bare part there underneath it. Well, somebody noticed it when they peeled the wrap off the front of the car, and that's how they got caught. But they didn't modify the Gen 7 part. So the question is, is it going to be enough to constitute an additional penalty, that L3 penalty that we heard about and that Brad Keselowski's team got hit with earlier this year? Well, from a black and white interpretation of the rule book, it almost sounds like, no, they didn't tamper with a Gen 7 part. They tampered with the covering on the car. So I'm interested to see how this plays out. We're probably not going to find anything out until Tuesday or Wednesday. But in the statement that NASCAR released when they announced the disqualification, they said that it likely doesn't merit additional penalty, but it's definitely something to keep an eye on.
Okay, Tommy.
Yeah, I'm curious to see what they're going to announce additionally this week, too. But definitely the right call. I mean, like you guys said, it does feel like NASCAR is like the only sport that actually says, you know, you're not cheating if you're trying. I mean, Tom Brady's been busted a couple times, but, I mean, that dude's got 7 Super Bowls. So, you know, cheater or not, he still is good. But you definitely don't want the reputation, like you guys said. And it doesn't look good either. I agree with that statement. It doesn't look good that 2 cars got disqualified. Just a great lucky day to be Chase and Hendrick Motorsports. They come away with the win, and Chase, you know, gets the points and he gets extra stuff. So he's just building his championship case even further. And not a good day for Denny, and definitely not a good day for Kyle Busch. Still looking for a sponsor. Had a second-place car or a car that could have won what I thought at one point. Now it doesn't even matter if he was going to win because he was going to get DQ'd. So not a good day for them at all. And I'm sure Joe Gibbs is not happy.
Yeah, and I might lead into another hot topic here, but I'm going to say it. I think it's just ironic that Ross Chastain finishes ahead of Denny Hamlin now in the race results for this race. And I've seen some pretty funny memes on Twitter, too, as it relates to that, with Chase Elliott having some DQ ice cream. So that's been kind of fun to see. But that aside, I really don't think it's a very good look for the sport to have the top 2 drivers of a race disqualified. As far as additional, I think you're right, Mike. I think it all depends on what NASCAR finds when they do a further review at the R&D Center as to whether or not they'll take more. But honestly, I think they need to come down hard on this one. I know they lost some points, but they still have the race wins. They still have their playoff points. And I think about what happened with Brad Keselowski, and they took 10 playoff points from him. And if he does get a race win, he starts in the hole with playoff points. I do think that something similar to that might need to happen in this particular case as well. It might have been creative thinking on the part of Joe Gibbs Racing, but it was cheating. There's no other way to look at that. And I do think that if NASCAR wants to stop that kind of creative thinking, then they need to do something to discourage it. And I do think that maybe they might need to consider. And maybe it's on the level of first time, maybe they'll let it go by, but if they're caught a second time, I think they definitely need to take points away. And same with the third time, you're not in the playoffs. So, because as I said earlier, I just don't think it's a good look for this sport to crown a champion that has been caught cheating throughout the season. So the last people I want to see winning a championship at this point are Denny Hamlin and Kyle Busch for this season. I want it to be anybody but them at this point. Jay?
Well, you and Tommy both hit on a possible couple of other hot topics. Tommy bringing up how this might affect Kyle Busch in the sponsorship search with Joe Gibbs mm-hmm. Racing. And you talking about Denny Hamlin, Ross Chastain, and I know I have that one on my list if we can get to it tonight. I know we got a lot. What I look at, though, from the talking about the bad look for the sport, I don't view it as bad from the aspect because they were caught and they were penalized, which is what the fans supposedly wanted. And I use the word fans loosely because I haven't decided yet if they're truly NASCAR fans or if they're just bashing on it because they can or want to. But now they're saying, oh, NASCAR just DQ'd him so that their golden boy of Chase Elliott can win the race. No, that is not what they were doing yet. I mean, you know, that's what I don't understand is where that comes from. And Chase Elliott said it. I don't want to win that way. You know, you win a race by a rainout or, early call of the race, something like that. That's one thing. Okay, that happens. But to, especially from third place, you know, that far back, having the top two DQ'd, yeah, that's not how you want to win. You know, they had the better car. And that's what Chase was saying. You know, with telling Denny to keep the Denny Hamlin to keep the trophy, they got outrun. Now, whether that was because of the modification, don't know. NASCAR deemed it was an aero advantage and shouldn't have been there. When it comes to the penalty, I think it's a done deal. As Mike said, they did not modify one of the Gen 7 spec parts, which is a big no-no. They added to it. So I think the DQ of the race, as we've seen in the past, is going to be pretty much it. We go back to, I know Mike mentioned it in the chat room, Chase Elliott's team pulling tape off the spoiler a few years back. Yeah, that was the same thing. It cost him on the spot. Boom, it was done. So that to me was a big thing. I think it's done, and it hurts them. I mean, you know, the change between Denny Hamlin, I think they said he was going to come out, if he'd gotten the race win and the points he had supposedly earned, was going to come out seated second in the standings. Now, like you mentioned, those points go to Chase Elliott and others. I mean, that's a huge shift. So I think that's pretty much done deal.
Okay. And I do feel like it is a modification to the car. But, you know, that's just a different – my way of looking at it. They modified the part of the car that they were told not to modify. And they hid it so that NASCAR wouldn't find it. So, to me, that's a modification to the car. So, anyway, we'll go ahead and move on to the next hot topic. Mike, what are you at? Where do you want to go from here?
Well, this isn't going to be an official hot topic. I just want to point out to Jay, talk about people saying that NASCAR disqualified the top two so their golden boy could win. You should have seen the people saying the same stuff, trying to say that the SRX cheated up Chase Elliott's car so he could win the SRX race on Saturday. Forget that he beat Dave Blaney and Tony Stewart on dirt. It's just people got an axe to grind about Chase Elliott sometimes, and they want to pretend that he's not a very talented race car driver. Anyway, speaking of talented race car drivers, I'm going to kind of make a two-for-one hot topic here because we've got a lot to cover. We've already talked about the contract negotiation issues with Kyle Busch, and things are starting to look pretty bad. I want to say it was Dustin Long. I'm not positive on that, but he was citing his unnamed sources that say it looks pretty much of a done deal that Kyle Busch will not be back in the 18 next year. There was some nonverbal body language that was seen between Coach Gibbs and Kyle Busch after the race yesterday that looked pretty chilly. And David Wilson, I may be wrong, I think it's David Wilson from TRD, has also said that the situation with Kyle Busch is not looking very good. I think he used the word up against a wall right now. Things are not looking good for Kyle Busch returning to the 18 car next year. Oh, by the way, a very talented race car driver named Ty Gibbs had his first NASCAR Cup Series start filling in for an injured Kurt Busch yesterday in the 45 car. Ty Gibbs had never run a single lap in a NASCAR Cup Series car, not a tire test, not a practice, nothing. His first lap in a NASCAR Cup Series car was when they threw the green yesterday at Pocono. Ty Gibbs ended up finishing 18th on the racetrack, 16th once you count out the two disqualifications. He beat a lot of big drivers, not just through attrition. He ran all the laps. He finished on the lead lap, and he did very, very well. So kind of the two for one. Will Kyle Busch be out of the 18, and will Ty Gibbs be in the 18?
Okay, Tommy, you're up next.
I think so, yes. I really do. Eminem's leaving is huge. That's such a disappointment. I mean, I think of the Ken Schrader car and the Elliot Sadler, David Gilliland, and then eventually Kyle Busch getting it. However, in a perfect world, I see Ty Gibbs bringing back Interstate Batteries onto the 18 car. So Kyle Busch is going to be fine either way. I mean, the guy, maybe it was his own fault he didn't take a pay cut. I don't know. I haven't seen anything out there. But I did see where he was on. What I saw on Twitter said, I don't know who the sources were. I don't remember. Maybe it was Adam Stern or somebody like that. But he was going to sign a big sponsorship. The deal fell through. And, I just see him either going to Richard Childress Racing or Stuart Haas next year. I don't know which car, of course. That's where I see Kyle Busch going, and I see them going ahead and pulling up Ty Gibbs. Is Ty Gibbs ready? I don't know. Everybody says that he needed another year. I mean, the guy's already been racing for a year and a half and has 10 or 15 wins. I mean, I don't see why he's not going to win a championship this year unless, payback from his aggressive driving style gets him in the Xfinity field. The veterans remember, I'm sure they will. But either way, he and Noah Gragson are going to be the hottest two drivers to pull up from the Xfinity Series. They're going to be competing for the rookie battle next year, in my opinion. But whoever else, I don't know. But I can see it happening. I can really see him being in an 18 car next year, and I just hope it's with Interstate Batteries. And like I said, Kyle Busch is a great – he's going to find sponsorship, whether it be at Stuart Haas, Richard Childress, or wherever. He'll get signed by somebody, and I'm sure he'll even win a race or two next year in that new car. I mean, he's that good.
Okay. Jay.
All right, Sharon, we got 3 minutes, and I know I'm going to go longer than that. So if you want to do your spiel now, or you can interrupt me, your choice.
Nope, I'll go ahead and do it now. Just for those people that are maybe tuning in for the first time, we do an announcement at this time of the night just to let you know that we will go off the air at exactly 10:30 p.m. Eastern Time. And you'll hear us going off the air while we're still mid-sentence and continuing our conversation. We just want you to know we are going to record the rest of that conversation, and it will be available as part of our podcast after the show. So what I do is I go out on Twitter just to let everybody know that the podcast is available, and I'm doing that now on Facebook as well. And at that point, you can go to our player at fanforracing.com and just fast forward to that two-hour mark and hear the rest of the conversation. So we just don't want any of our new listeners to be caught off guard, not knowing how they can hear the rest of the conversation. So we do this announcement so that there are no surprises when we go off the air. So with that, Jay, let's hear what you have to say.
I know it doesn't look good, but I don't think it's a foregone conclusion or a signed deal yet that he's not going to be back with Joe Gibbs Racing. I know with Toyota TRD, their statement of they're looking at all options is they got to be prepared in case it doesn't, but I think their primary goal is still to keep Kyle Busch. And I know Kyle Busch talked about it. He did acknowledge he had met and talked with Stuart Haas Racing. But he has to factor in he owns a Toyota truck team. So that could become a conflict of interest. So he's got to look at that as well if he signs with a Ford team of how that plays into his truck team and the employees he's protecting or providing for there. So there's a lot of different layers. I saw the video Mike posted of Joe Gibbs and Pat and Kyle Busch and kind of walking by him. I think somebody's reading a lot into that if they're trying to take that as, hey, good luck next year. I just don't see that being as of yet. Like I said, I think there is still a very good possibility that one way or another he still ends up at Joe Gibbs Racing. They already said they kind of wanted to give Ty Gibbs another year in Xfinity. He did a great job. I will say that. He did a great job in the Cup Series race in the Kurt Busch's car. and a fill-in job. Very impressive. And we'll talk about his Xfinity race when we talk about the rivalries on track in a minute. But I think that Martin Truex comes into play there, that's kind of the plan is Martin Truex maybe only doing one more year. So I still think their primary goal is Kyle Busch. They had one deal, like Tommy, I think, mentioned, was close or getting close, that came apart. So I think another one can still be done. And I think long-term, everybody, I think, is going to benefit if Kyle Busch stays in the JGR Toyota camp.
Okay. I agree with you as far as that video. I don't think – I think a lot is being read into that. What I saw is Joe Gibbs kind of giving a reassuring tap on the shoulder as he was walking by Kyle Busch. Kyle Busch was kind of preoccupied, I think, at the moment, and I think that was misinterpreted as being an icy reaction to Joe Gibbs' reassuring hand on his arm. I do think that things are going to work out for Kyle Busch. You know, it could go either way. Let's be honest. It could go either way. I know TRD and Joe Gibbs Racing have both said that they want to keep Kyle Busch and they will do whatever they can do to keep him in the fold at Joe Gibbs Racing. Now, whether or not that happens, I don't know. Jay, you bring up an interesting point. The only way I see that working, if he were to go to Stewart Haas Racing, which is a Ford organization, is if he changes Kyle Busch Motorsports over to Ford from Toyota. They've had such a good relationship with Toyota, though, it's hard to imagine that would happen. Same thing with Chevrolet. He would have to change manufacturers and change his organization to whatever that manufacturer is if he changes his affiliation. So I think they will do they're going to try to move mountains as far as I can see. Now, I know some people are saying it's looking less and less likely, and that may be true. It has been an uphill battle for them to get the sponsorship they need for Kyle Busch. And by the way, it's not just Kyle Busch. We have drivers in the series that are taking time out of the race car because they don't have sponsorship for specific races. And that's what the sponsorship model has come down to. The days of having one sponsor for an organization is fading into the background, and it is less likely to have a full-time sponsor for a full season like M&M's has done over the past several years. And they've just made a decision that they're going to reallocate those funds. So it takes more than one sponsor to fill the gap that M&M's is going to leave, and that's the challenge that is presented to Toyota and actually it's Joe Gibbs Racing that is responsible for securing that sponsorship. So I think they'll try to do everything they possibly can. If it doesn't work out, it's going to be an unfortunate situation. But I have heard actually some rumblings, too, about the possibility of Denny Hamlin making a decision at the end of this season that might put him out of the number 11 car, whether it's at the end of this season or the end of next season. But I think we might hear some things from Denny Hamlin by the end of this season as well. So that's another possibility for Ty Gibbs. But I thought Ty Gibbs did a great job. Not only did he do a good job in the Cup Series, keeping his car clean and everything else, but I thought the race with Noah Gragson in the Xfinity race, I thought both of them, who have had controversial wins in the past, both of them raced very cleanly, and I thought it was a lot of fun to watch both of them show their talent at the end of that race and race each other very cleanly for that victory. So I thought I was really impressed with both Noah Gragson and Ty Gibbs in that Xfinity Series race as well. So time will tell the rest of that story, but I'm thinking that they're going to, it might look dim at this point, but you never know what can turn things around and still bring Kyle Busch back to Joe Gibbs Racing. But he does have options if it doesn't happen. Mike, your thoughts?
I know I teed this topic up and kind of implied a certain thought pattern of where I thought this was going to go. So I'm going to subvert your expectations. For all those people on Twitter and Reddit and Facebook and all the other social media outlets who are thinking that Kyle Busch is leaving Joe Gibbs Racing, pump your brakes. Where's he going to go? There's nobody, and I mean nobody, in the NASCAR Cup Series garage right now who can offer Kyle Busch anything close to what Joe Gibbs Racing is offering. Joe Gibbs Racing presents Kyle Busch the best opportunity available to win. They are, I would say, probably the number two team in the NASCAR Cup Series right now behind Hendrick Motorsports in terms of performance. And Hendrick Motorsports has no openings, nor will they anytime soon. Hendrick Motorsports is not going to fire Chase Elliott or William Byron or anybody else to put Kyle Busch in one of Hendrick Motorsports' cars. So Hendrick Motorsports is off the table. Same thing for Team Penske. They will not have any openings. So what's left? Well, Stuart Haas Racing. I know Gene Haas has some very deep pockets, but I don't know if they're deep enough to pay Kyle Busch what Kyle Busch wants. So maybe he doesn't get the money. Oh, by the way, Stuart Haas Racing is firmly a step down from Joe Gibbs Racing and Hendrick Motorsports, at least in terms of current performance. Not saying they can't come back. Obviously, teams come and they go. But and based on current performance, if Kyle Busch was to go to Stuart Haas Racing, it would undeniably be a step down in performance capability from what Joe Gibbs Racing currently has to offer him. And every other team, Richard Childress Racing, Trackhouse, JTG, all those other potential teams, even if they have openings, they all represent at least one, if not several, steps down in performance from what Joe Gibbs Racing is offering. So Kyle Busch is almost certainly looking at a pay cut right now, no matter where he goes. They did not, or at least up to this point, have not been able to secure the single sponsor to replace M&M and pay Kyle Busch KFB money. That's just how it's going to be. And there's no other team in the garage right now that has the ability to pay KFB kind of money. And Kyle Busch is just going to have to accept that. I think Kyle Busch does return to the 18 next year, but I don't think it's going to be for the same amount of money that he thinks he's entitled to. And at this point, he's kind of coasting on what he's done in years past. Because what has he done for me lately? One win in 2021. One win in 2020. Two wins in 2022. Only one win so far this year and has not been super competitive for wins most weekends this year. Kyle Busch is not producing the kind of results that he did 5 years ago, and it's not the most commanding position for him to be in a contract negotiation standpoint to demand the kind of money or whatever other considerations he thinks he's entitled to in order to stay at Joe Gibbs Racing. I think he's just at a point where there's no better alternative available to him other than Joe Gibbs Racing. With regard to Ty Gibbs, well, that's another big question. If Kyle Busch really wants to lean and make Joe Gibbs pay him KFB money, well, there's a long tradition in this country of parents, and in this case grandparents, using their children for child labor and paying them pennies on the dollar from what they would pay another employee. So maybe Joe Gibbs does see Ty Gibbs as a really cheap solution to fill that 18 car with a very talented driver. But at this point, I really don't see it happening right now just for lack of other alternatives.
Okay. Tommy, your follow-up.
I can still see it happening. I mean, everybody's really bringing up good points here, but what you just said, so M&M's is leaving. That's a big deal. Personally, this year, last year, and the year before, I have to agree with your statement of, you know, he's got one, two wins, and then a win this year. It's still Kyle Busch at the end of the day. He's still going to win plenty more races wherever that may be at, but I feel like his attitude over the past few years and this year is just making the decision a little bit easier. Sponsorship is leaving. Ty Gibbs is Joe Gibbs' grandson. I see the move happening sooner rather than later. I really do. I mean, I don't see why they need to even wait. I think he's going to be fine. I mean, he won his first Xfinity race and then went on to win multiple races that year in that car. in the 54 car. And then this year, I mean, he's doing the same thing. Yeah, I know the cup level is tough, but, I mean, go ahead and throw him in there. And, I mean, over the past few years, it's taken these guys a few years to get going. Kyle Larson, Chase Elliott, William Byron. Go ahead and throw him in there and let him be learning, because I think that he'll probably catch on quick. And, I mean, like I said, him and Gragson are the ones that are going to be coming up this year. I really do think that. And then Sharon, you said, you know, Denny might leave, whether that be retire or, you know, go to his own team, which, I mean, who knows what's going to happen. But that would be great for Joe Gibbs. Then he can add Ty Gibbs and keep Kyle Busch, hopefully. But I see he's going to have to take a pay cut, like you're saying. If he wants to stay at Joe Gibbs, he's going to have to take a pay cut. If he doesn't want to take a pay cut, then they can pull up Ty Gibbs, and then he's going to have to go to Stuart Haas or Richard Childress and take a pay cut. So, I don't know. We'll see. But I do not think that it is not – it is a strong possibility that I think that we see the 18 car with Monster Energy and Interstate Batteries and Ty Gibbs in 2023 or 2023.
Okay, Jay.
Yeah, I don't know. I mean, there's so many different layers to that. You guys have brought up some really interesting things when it comes to Denny Hamlin. My thought, a lot of what I heard was about Martin Truex. So, yeah, excuse me. And, you know, there comes the point where whoever the next guy up is, whether it be a relation or not, if you can bring somebody from the Xfinity Series for pennies on the dollar, as opposed to a top driver like Kyle Busch, that option is always there. And I think that's something maybe Kyle is going to have to do on his part, if being with Toyota so he can keep his truck organization as is, you know, that may come into play. And I think you're right. No matter who he's with or where he goes, I think a pay cut is coming based on the numbers of what we've heard he makes. So that's going to happen no matter what. And I think he does, as Mike said, I mean, nobody can offer what Joe Gibbs Racing does to begin with. He would have to elevate that team. Now, Stuart Haas Racing is, I find that one intriguing to think about. Him and Kevin Harvick as teammates would be an interesting thought for sure. When you talk about one too many roosters in the hen house from Days of Thunder, but... So we'll have to see how it plays out, but I don't think it's a done deal yet. It doesn't look good, but we've all seen that in the past where things all of a sudden change in a hurry.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, you guys are making some excellent points, and I do think it is going to be interesting. I think we all agree that we think they're going to do everything they possibly can do to keep Kyle Busch in the fold. It's unfortunate that Kyle would have to take a pay cut, but that's the reality of the situation. And like you said, he's going to have to come to terms with it. But let's keep in mind, Kyle Busch does have his team. You know, should it not work out, and if he wants to not go to another organization for a pay cut, he still has his Truck Series team, and he can build on that. And let's keep in mind, too, he has Brexton. Brexton is racing all over the country right now, and Kyle wants to be a part of that. So it might not be that big of a deal for him to step away if it comes to that, and focus on his race team and working with his son. So, you know, there are – that's the only thing I can really add to what you guys have said, because you've done such a good job of kind of covering all the different scenarios that could happen here. And you guys are right. I think, you know, it's going to be time that tells the rest of that story. So, Mike, you get the last word on this.
Well, I haven't been very good on predictions this year. Just referenced my fantasy points, as well as my firm position that the money team and NY Racing would not show up at the Daytona 500 and races beyond. And we all saw how that worked out. So I have just now finished digesting my meal of crow that I had from earlier this year. I don't want to say firmly that I believe Kyle Busch will be back in the 18 car, but if I were a betting man, I would still bet we see him back in the 18. There's other options, like you said. I mean, he could just step away entirely. He has said he could be Brexton Bush's car hauler driver. He did kind of say it tongue-in-cheek, but that's not out of the realm of possibilities. I'm pretty sure even if Kyle Busch didn't – if he took a pay cut down to zero and did not drive professionally again for the rest of his life, chances are he probably wouldn't have too much trouble keeping the lights on at the house for the rest of his life. So he's not hurt for money. He's got options available to him, which is a great thing to have. It's definitely something we're going to have to keep an eye on, and I'm sure we're going to talk about it more in the future. But like I said, if I were a betting man, I wouldn't go throw my Kyle Busch 18 merchandise in the trash now. Not that I would ever own any Kyle Busch merchandise myself, but if you have such poor fashion taste as to own Kyle Busch merchandise, it's probably still going to be good for next year.
Okie doke. That brings us to Tommy. You get to bring up the next hot topic.
Okay, let's go with, let's see here. Let's talk about how Ty Dillon is not going to be back in the 42 car next year.
Good one. Okay, Jay, your thoughts about Ty Dillon and what's happening at GMS and RPM?
This one's an interesting one from the aspect of, and this might be where something where I'm reading too much into something, but when we look at Noah Gregson and being ready to move up to Cup, of looking more towards a college racing is who he's kind of been working with. Now, Chevrolet obviously has the partnership with GMS. That organization, I don't know if it, his talent will be displayed there. So it was a little bit surprising. I would have kind of thought maybe with College Racing being the one that looked to be more advanced. Now, Petty GMS or GMS Petty, whichever way it is, has shown some good things. But I also saw those good things from Ty Dillon, and I think that's one of those where I just feel like Ty Dillon has never given a full more than a year to display that talent, and he's always been with that little bit underfunded or 20th place team. So it's a shame. I know Ty, I heard from it when Ty Dillon had the interview on it. It sounds like he is coming back to the Xfinity Series. I don't know that that's been locked down. And Noah Gregson being the driver has not been locked down either, but there's a lot of finger pointing going on in that direction. I get the feeling there's a lot of very secure talk that just isn't being officially announced because there was a lot of people pointing that one out, that appears to be where he's headed. So if so, I hope he does good there. I think he can bring to that program, and we'll go back. I don't know if we'll have time to hit on it tonight. We saw, at least for one race, some maturity on Ty Gibbs and Noah Gregson in the Xfinity Series. Sharon, I knew you'd be happy with that race. It was a great race, a great finish between the two of them, who have both been aggressive drivers. And I think they both said, hey, we can do this without it. And they put on one heck of a show. So I'm excited to see Gregson in the Cup Series. I hope that team is able to elevate with him if he goes to that team.
Okay, Mike.
I'm not going to sugarcoat it. Ty Dillon has been lousy in every ride he's ever had. I know Jay said he's been stuck in 20th place cars, but that's not always the case. He had half a dozen to 10 starts last year in the number 54 Xfinity car. That car won literally half of the races on the Xfinity schedule last year, whether it was being driven by Kyle Busch, Martin Truex, Denny Hamlin, or a full-time ARCA driver named Ty Gibbs. That 54 car was winning almost every single weekend, except when Ty Dillon was in the car, and it was a 15th to 20th place car when Ty Dillon was driving the car. So to say that Ty Dillon hasn't had the opportunity to showcase his talents is not necessarily true. He had 2 or 3 years in the Germain Racing number 13. Now they were not a Hendrick Motorsports level car, but they did have an affiliation with Hendrick Motorsports, and that car was mid pack at best when Ty Dillon was in there. I don't think he ever got the most out of that equipment that could have been gotten out of. Ty Dillon has underperformed in every single opportunity he's been given. Look how the 43 is running with Petty GMS and Eric Jones behind the wheel of the 43 versus the 42. Eric Jones is consistently 10 to 15 positions better on the track than Ty Dillon is in the 42 and what we can assume to be relatively similar equipment. So Ty Dillon has had many, many, many opportunities to showcase his ability, and he's come up short every single time. It's no surprise they let him go. Now, as far as who goes into that 42 car, I agree. I think Noah Gregson is probably the leading candidate for that ride. Nothing's been announced yet, but it does make sense with it being a Chevrolet team. Granted, like you said, he's got a little bit more of the hooks in him from Colleague Racing, but then again, Colleague also sounds like they've got a pretty full slate of drivers that they want to run in their Colleague cars in the Cup Series. So maybe Petty GMS is a better fit for Noah Gregson moving into the NASCAR Cup Series next year. But seeing Ty Dillon go, not a surprise at all. Maybe a surprise that it was announced this early in the year that he's going to continue through the remainder of the year, but it's also not the earliest announcement that we've gotten so far this year as far as silly season driver changes. We already know a move that's coming up in 2024 that we'll talk about here. Maybe if we've got enough time this evening, it might end up spilling into the next show. But, yeah, seeing Ty Dillon out on the street, not a surprise at all.
Yeah, you're kind of leading into what my thoughts were too, Mike, and that is that I've always wondered why Ty Dillon is not racing for Richard Childress Racing. Austin Dillon has been a staple there, but for some reason, I always thought, beforehand that it would be Austin Dillon and Ty Dillon racing at RCR. And for whatever reason, I think there's more to the story there. But then what kind of started this whole announcement about Ty Gibbs, for me, started when I saw a tweet from the King Richard Petty saying, enough, I've had enough, on Twitter. And that was all he said, I've had enough. And I thought, uh-oh, something's going on. And then lo and behold, there was another tweet from Richard Petty, and I don't have the exact wording of it, but again, he was just saying that he wasn't going to tolerate certain things anymore. And it was shortly after that.
Sharon?
Yeah?
Sharon, those tweets were part of a Hardee's promotion for a new sponsor deal.
I've had enough?
Yes. I forget what the punchline was for it, but they led up over a couple of days. They led up to a Hardee's promotion with Richard Petty basically pushing Hardee's chicken sandwiches. And I think it was like, I've had enough of other companies' chicken sandwiches. So the whole Ty Dillon thing was completely coincidental, but I completely understand what you were saying with it about how they really seemed to line up together. But yeah, Richard Petty and the I've had enough tweets were part of a Hardee's promotion for a new sponsorship deal.
Okay, because the tweet I saw didn't say anything about anything else. It just said, I've had enough. But, yeah, and I thought it was tied into the Ty Dillon thing because it was shortly after that the announcement came that Ty Dillon was no longer going to be racing for GMS Petty Racing. So I thought it was connected. And unfortunately, I was also sick during the time, so my apologies if I didn't tie all that in together. I was just getting little bits and pieces, I guess. But I do think that it led me to believe that there was a little bit of an issue there between Richard Petty and Ty Dillon. So I guess I have to kind of realign my thinking on that if it was some kind of promotion that it only happened at the same time. But I do think there's more to the story here for some reason. I've never understood why Ty Dillon is not racing at RCR. And I still don't understand, now that he's looking for a shot, why wouldn't Richard Childress pick him up to race at RCR? And if you know, and have him racing there. But I agree with you. He hasn't really lived up to expectations in a lot of cases. And in some cases, it seems like there might be a trying too hard kind of scenario that's going on where he wants to prove himself so bad that he's pushing it just a little bit too hard and kind of self-defeating himself. So I just think I'd love to know what the backstory is on Ty Dillon and RCR and now what's happening at JMS Petty Racing. It just seems weird that they would just suddenly in the middle of the season like that make the announcement that they're going to part ways. I think there's more to this story than what meets the eye. I just don't know what it is. Tommy?
Yeah, I kind of agree with you guys. I mean, Mike said it right off the bat, what I was going to say, which was just take a look at last year. He was out of a ride. He shared the 54 car with Ty Gibbs, Denny Hamlin, Kyle Busch, and Martin Truex, and he was the only one that didn't do good in the car. Was he trying too hard? You might be right, because he did wreck at Daytona. I feel like he wrecked in every race he was in, probably trying too hard. But he wouldn't have to be trying hard if he wasn't in that position to begin with, and he's in that position because he was at RCR at one point, because I do remember him driving that 3 Bass Pro Shop camo truck with the orange. He nearly beat Chase Elliott, but Chase Elliott wrecked him for the win. I remember that at whatever race that was. But I think he's had his chances, and he's already been announced to be going out the door. Who's going to be in that car next year? The only two people that we know for sure that might possibly be free agents or might be open for that car would be Kyle Busch and Noah Gragson. Of course, I'm sure there'll be other guys become available for that car. But, yeah, I think that we've seen the end of Ty Dillon probably. Maybe he'll go back to the Xfinity or Truck Series, and, you know, if he lands a stable ride, I'm sure he can snag a win or two. I mean, I'm not saying that he's not completely talentless. He had some good runs in that 13 Geico car, just like Casey Mears did, but, you know, he still didn't get a win at the end of the day. And if you want to compete at the top level, you have to have wins in order to stay. So not really surprised. It stinks for him because it is cool that Austin and Ty get to share a track together, but, I mean, he got a win, and he hasn't done that, and he hasn't been doing that great, so not really a surprise.
Okay, Jay?
Yeah, I would not dispute that he hasn't lived up to expectations as far as driver talent. Some of it I do think it has to do with the equipment he's been in. You mentioned those spots that he had in the Xfinity Series. I think both Sharon and Tommy mentioned it, maybe trying too hard to prove it. We've seen that with Riley Herbst. I think he's another one that maybe is in that boat of trying too hard that it actually reflects poorly. You know, Sharon, that topic of why he's never been at RCR has been around since he moved up. And in my opinion, I don't think Austin Dillon has lived up to expectations either. That is not saying they don't have talent. He has wins. Some of them have come questionably. Some of them have been, you know, good runs. But when you look at when they brought in Tyler Reddick of who got the win, who's in the playoffs, who's outperforming who. So, but that happens, and I don't know why. We look at Roush Fenway Kozlowski racing. Chris Buescher has been outperforming Brad for whatever reason. You know, the equipment's the same. The driver talent you would think would favor Brad, but it's been Chris Buescher. So looking at RPM in GMS, Jones has been there, been more established with the team. Their team just is clicking better together with it for whatever reason. Now, we mentioned of whether it be sponsor-driven or whatever, they have the opportunity to bring somebody else in possibly Noah Gragson, and try a change. I understand it. I hope Ty Dillon does get another spot. It looks like it's going to be in the Xfinity Series with Alpha Prime from what the rumbling is there. And I think that's maybe one of those things if somebody does need to go to another series and reestablish themselves with an organization.
Okay, Mike.
Well, Jay brings up a good point about Austin Dillon and the Dillon brothers. To your point about why Ty Dillon hasn't been driving in a Richard Childress car, Ty's always kind of tried to present the image of him striking out on his own and doing it without his name. Now, everyone who knows anything, they know that's all bovine exhaust. It's completely not true. Richard Childress has backed Ty Dillon either directly or indirectly throughout his entire driving career, but it is what it is. But that's why Ty Dillon is not in the 8 car and Tyler Reddick is. With regard to Austin Dillon in the 3 car, I agree. I don't think that Austin Dillon has gotten the most out of that car. And now that Tyler Reddick has really hit his stride in the 8 car, it has shown that Richard Childress Racing equipment is, it's maybe not Hendrick Motorsports equipment, but where did Ty Dillon finish yesterday? Well, he scored second behind Chase Elliott. He crossed the finish line fourth. He's second of the legal cars that finished yesterday's race. Tyler Reddick already has one win this year. He is one dive bomb from Chase Briscoe away from not having 2 wins this year, and he's got several others that probably got away from him, and I don't know that he's done winning this year at all in that 8 car. On the other hand, I'm at the point now where I'd be kind of surprised if I saw Austin Dillon win a race. I'm not saying it's not possible. He has won races before, but he is definitely not the weekly threat to win that Tyler Reddick is. And we can assume that that 8 car is probably about equal to the 3 car. So the fact that Tyler Reddick is able to get so much more out of that car, it shows that maybe it's not an equipment issue. Maybe it's a driver issue. And Austin Dillon is kind of, underperforming in that car. Now, the discussion here is about Ty Dillon and what's going to happen with him. Well, if he ends up at Alpha Prime, at least he'll be able to keep the lights on at the house. But I think his time as a serious NASCAR Cup Series driver has come to a close, and I think rightfully so. He's had more than enough opportunities to prove what he's capable of doing. And, well, he's shown what he's capable of doing, and it's not winning races.
Well, I would like to see Ty Dillon maybe get another chance, maybe in the truck series. I think he could have the potential to be really good in that series. And that might be his last chance. You guys are right. He's kind of on his last leg. But I do think it would be a good play if he were to go to the truck series. So for me personally, I'd like to see him do that. Whether or not he does is another thing, but I do think that Ty Gibbs is kind of at the end of the rope, but I do think that he's trying too hard. I think he needs to give himself a little bit of a break and not try so hard. I think it would maybe enhance his performance a little bit because he's overdriving the car, and that's what's getting him into trouble. If he can learn how to not do that overdriving, then I think he has more potential there. But then if he continues to overdrive the car, it's self-defeating, as I said before. So he just has to learn how to temper himself. And if somebody gives him a chance, I think it should be in the truck series. And I think he might be able to make that work for himself. We'll see. Tommy?
Well, Austin Dillon, too. I said it on the podcast a couple weeks ago, I think. If you're going to be in the 3 car, you have to put it in victory lane or at least be in the top 5 mm-hmm. or 10 every week. And Austin Dillon just does not do that. I'm sorry. The same thing goes for the 24 and 43 car and the 8 car now, too. Like, those are the iconic cars. Throw the 48 car in there, too. You got to have those cars in the top 5, 10 every week. It's just important. And Austin Dillon won the Daytona 500 by wrecking Eric Almirola. He won the Charlotte race on a pit strategy with the Coca-Cola 600, and he won at Texas a few years ago on a restart to beat Tyler Reddick, his teammate. I'm not saying the guy's not talented. He does have wins. Can't take them away from him. All I'm saying is if you drive the 3 car, please put it in victory lane. And preferably, I would love to see Kyle Busch go to the RCR, get in a three car, and get rid of Austin Dillon too. But I have a feeling that RCR gets rid of the three car. It's not going to be – if Austin Dillon leaves, the three car leaves, which is terrible. But then, because, I want the three car to stay. But outside of respect, that is my heart's number. So I think Junior should call the shop when he drives it next. Back to Ty Dillon. I'd like to see him in the Trucker Xfinity Series. I don't think he's talentless. I just don't think that he's going to get another cup shot. I mean, Newman's out, and I wasn't ready to see him leave. But the only reason why I would want to see Ty on the track is because it's cool to have both of the Dillon brothers out there. But looks like that's coming to an end, and we'll either see him in the Xfinity or Truck Series if he can find a ride.
Okay. That's an interesting scenario with Kyle Busch in the number three. That I think a lot of fans would like that if it were to happen. We'll have to see. Some fans might not like it, though, too. So that's an interesting scenario. Okay. With that, I think we're well past our time here, so let's go ahead and do our roundtable. Tommy, we'll start with you and work our way back to Jay.
Twitter, give me a follow. You can take a look at my cars. I've been posting a day's date with them. I have a ton of 164 diecast. I haven't even touched some of these that y'all haven't seen yet, so more to come.
Well, I've loved the ones that I've seen so far. It's really fun to watch that. Mike?
Sure. It's Mike underscore Ozell on Twitter, Mike double underscore O on Reddit. Got an article coming out. I believe you said you're going to publish it tomorrow. It's a little dated. I wrote it immediately after the Atlanta race. Unfortunately, Sharon came down with the coof. So it's a little bit out of date, but still, it should be worth the read examining the Atlanta race and what NASCAR could potentially do to improve attendance at their new exciting toy super speedway they've got.
Okay. Jay.
A couple of things here. Tommy, you mentioned the old M&M's cars. I love seeing some of them. I know you've had a couple of them up already on your date. So you mentioned the M&M's cars. Those are the ones I like to see. And second, Sharon, I think you're mistaken. It's not very often I say you make a mistake, but I don't know many fans that would want to see Kyle Busch in the iconic number three. I really disagree with that. And I'd have
to
be one of them.
I
don't think that
would
be.
Like it too.
I would be one of them. I understand it going to Dillon as a family member, but yeah, Kyle Busch in the three, I think, would bring down the house. But you can follow me on Facebook, Michael Hoosman, MoparMJ8 on Twitter and Instagram. And again, excited to be back on the air and preview show on Thursday, and I'll have an update with our points. I got to correct some things there in favor of Mike, unfortunately.
Okay. I am Fan for Racing Site on Twitter and Fan for Racing Blog and Radio everywhere else, including fanforracing.com, where we have our Fan for Racing Radio player so that you can hear our podcast and bonus overtime material there. Now, I will have that article published tomorrow afternoon for Mike about Atlanta. And again, I apologize for the delay in getting that published. I had a sea of emails to go through. I didn't really do anything for the 2 weeks that I was down. But I will get that out tomorrow afternoon. We did have the post-race audio from Chandler Smith on our show earlier tonight. If you haven't heard that, he gave some really good information about where he is with his win from this past week at Pocono, but also looking ahead to the playoffs. He is a playoff contender, and he had some really good thoughts about going into the playoffs in his second season in the Truck Series. So if you haven't heard that, go back and take a listen. And Jay mentioned it. We are going to be doing our preview show on Thursday night. We'll have some more pre-race audio that we'll have available for you. I'm not sure exactly who that's going to be just yet. Look for that on Thursday night. And we're previewing the races out there at the Indianapolis Road Course as well as IRP, Indianapolis Raceway, at the Lucas Oil. It's a very long name now. Lucas Oil International Raceway, no, Indianapolis Raceway is the new name that we're talking about, and we will be previewing all of those races, including the ARCA race that will be taking place at that. So a little bit of brain fog going on there for me tonight, but I'm sure it will get better as time goes on here. So, again, thanks, everybody, for bearing with me over the last 2 weeks, and I'm really happy to be back and looking forward to our next shows that are coming up and the races that are coming up this weekend as well. So thanks to Tommy and Mike and Jay and Sal for being here tonight. You guys always make it entertaining and fun, and I'll look forward to our next show on Thursday. Thanks to the listeners for tuning in. We appreciate each and every one of you. And with that, I guess we're ready to call it a night, guys.
All right, good night, everybody.
Good night, everybody. We'll see you on Thursday.